You know, at a certain price point, if you're not going to include extra bacon, why have it?
Hello, and welcome to the Negative World Podcast, the podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at NegativeWorld.org. This is episode 66, and we are recording this on Tuesday, June 17th, 2014. I'm your host, Steven, and right now we don't have my co-host, Joe, because Joe is currently running a little late. He has some personal stuff to get through, but we had to start the show as scheduled. But he'll jump in soon, and you know we'll take a break to invite him in, so do not fret. In the meanwhile, we do have two guests who are awesome dudes, and they're going to join us for the E3 discussion part two tonight. First up, we have...
Hey, it's Hendrik, also known as Jargon from the boards.
Welcome back. Appreciate you coming back so soon.
Thanks for having me. Uh-huh.
And we also have a New York favorite.
This is Lou, also known as the old man from Zelda. Great to be back, second time on the show. Yeah.
Your voice is surprisingly... springful and youthful for an old man from Zelda.
I know a lot of wizardry things.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
Well, excellent. Thank you both for coming by and doing this with me. And pretty much for the listeners out there, hopefully you've listened to episode 65. And we're going to go through a lot of the same topics so that we have some fresh minds to get information and thoughts from. I'm going to try my best not to rehash any of my thoughts. Joe will do the same when he jumps in. But there are a few different topics that we will be talking about, though, so definitely it's worth listening to. And at some point, whenever Joe does arrive, maybe Lou's wizardry can help bring him faster. But we'd like to have Joe go over the E3 cards, those bingo cards we talked about a few episodes ago. And he can say how great or not great we did. So...
I have a guess as to which one it was.
And I don't have any spells to make him go faster. I can only make him jump higher, have more defense, or I could turn him into a fairy.
Turn him into a fairy. Why not? I mean, this it's not a visual podcast, so there's no, can't see the wings and the glitter and all that. But, I think...
Maybe as a lava-filled pit he has to get over to get home, so that would help.
Yes.
That said, let's jump in, though, because we do have a lot to talk about, and if episode 65 is any indication, this will take us a while. I want to ask you guys first, how did you feel about the overall presentation of the show? Because it was definitely different than we're used to for an E3 presentation. It was different than a Nintendo Direct, even. So between the digital... what do they call it? My mind's blanking. The digital... event,
yeah,
is that what it was? Between
the
that,
treehouse.
Between the treehouse live events, which were kind of a separate thing, than the main digital presentation is what I was thinking of, and then also just what went into the presentation. I mean, it was crazy. So, Jargon. I mean, do you have any things that kind of come to mind? Hendrik, Jargon, whatever.
Yeah, like you said, it was definitely different from a Nintendo Direct, and I think that was, like, the thing that struck me first was they definitely put a lot of time and, I guess, money into it. Starting right off with the fight between Reggie and Iwata, which was amazing, and I think that, the one thing was that if that was a live event, I think the crowd would have gone crazy for that, but even without it being a live event, I was getting hyped up. I can only imagine everyone was getting hyped up. It was a really great start to the show, I thought.
I gotta say that I was impressed with how, even though it always looks a little fake whenever they do those kind of moves in movies and stuff, it didn't look nearly as fake as it could have. It's so easy to tell when people are on strings, attached to their waist and they're doing some weird moves. But, I don't know, it just felt kind of cooler than that, I think. To see these guys battle.
And compared to the normal effects, special effects they have in Nintendo Direct, which is holding a banana, I thought it was a big step.
Oh, man, that was quite a momentous effect they did. It cost a lot of money. Did you think they were going to announce Mii characters with that, or do you think that were you thinking maybe they were going to announce Reggie and Iwata as characters? I was kind of leaning initially just to them being characters, not
actually,
the whole Mii thing.
Actually, I was in the Negative World chat room at the time, and as people can vouch for me that as soon as they came on, I said Mii's in Smash Brothers ? So I called it.
Very nice.
But yeah, I mean, I think that first of all, it's cool. I know some people don't like Mii's, don't want to see them in Smash Brothers, but to me, at this point, they're a big part of what Nintendo is, and I think that they fit in well.
Right, and Reggie said something about, and not to dive into Smash Bros. Discussion, but he said something about how nobody should have an excuse anymore to complain about this character's not in, this character's not, you know, in this game, and he's kind of wrong, but at the same time, it is a nice step forward. They didn't have to do it, and it was kind of a nice thing, and the presentation to show that off kind of gave it a feeling that it was an important thing to show. I mean, they led the show with it, you know?
Yeah.
Lou, is there anything about at least the beginning, the robot chicken segments?
I like that. That was funny. And yeah, compared to last year's show, I think last year they only have the digital event and then maybe some interviews with some people.
They might have done interviews, but yeah, it was a Nintendo Direct too, so you had Iwata doing the thing that we've been seeing all year, but it was just longer.
This year it was like information overload 24/7. Compared to last year.
Yeah.
Because I was following Nintendo and, of course, all the Negative Worlders on Twitter, and it was just like constant, nonstop information about all these games all the time. Mm-hmm. And I loved it.
Now, did you get a chance to watch the Treehouse live events?
I did watch a couple of them, but, you know, they focus on one game for an extended period of time. So for me, after a while, I see enough and then I turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
I did pay particular attention to the Smash Brothers tournament. I watched a lot of that.
Okay.
Especially the final few rounds. So that was pretty awesome, too. They should do that every year.
And, Hendrik, did you see anything about the tournament?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the tournament, I think, was the highlight for me of E3. Just seeing how hyped up everyone is, getting a chance to finally see... I mean... The game worked perfectly. Like there were, I was a little worried about, you could tell Sakurai was a little worried about something going wrong, and it was just perfectly smooth. I mean, I know it's got 6 months to go or about now till it comes out, but it honestly looked at a point where I would be willing to shell out for it right now.
Yeah, it looked shelf ready.
Right, exactly.
Which is pretty impressive, considering how much time they have left. And not to dive into this too soon, but I did go to the Best Buy event on Saturday, and I'm gonna have to say that it looks pretty ready as well. You know, just playing it live for a few minutes there. So,
Was your body ready?
My body was ready, and no joke. I have the new S5, the Galaxy S5 phone, and I measured my pulse with it. When I was in line, because I started feeling a little hot, so I just did that just to see, and my heart rate was a little bit elevated, and I think it was maybe at like 80 beats per minute, and normally it's like between 60, maybe a little bit under 60. I have a pretty slow resting heart rate, and so it was at 80, and then I was like, okay, well, that's interesting, and then as the line finally started creeping, I checked it a few times between that and actually getting up to the front of the line, and it got up to 100 beats per minute, just standing there. So,
wow.
So I was clearly like getting amped up without even realizing it. It was just all subconscious, but it did start lowering after I played the 3DS version when I tried that, and then I think I like got a fix, you know. And but it's funny. So my body was ready, but it was under pressure. Hashtag Queen. Hashtag David Bowie. I don't know why that was the first time I ever hashtagged live with my voice.
I think it was. Put it down.
I think I've been on Instagram and Twitter too much lately. You know what? And actually, that's a good segue, because Nintendo did something that I thought was smart. And when I was taking notes about the presentation, this is something that I wrote down every time, is they had hashtags during every developer commentary. So when Captain Toad was discussed, they had hashtag Captain Toad, you know, and then hashtag this, hashtag that. And I think that's smart because they've really been, with Miiverse from the start, they've been trying to utilize social media and to explicitly just say, hey, here's the hashtag to talk about it. And I did read a report, I think it was this morning, that Twitter, some sort of group that monitors Twitter activity, because that's got to be exciting to do, but they do that. And Nintendo had 47% of all E3-related tweets, which was smoked the competition. I think Sony or Microsoft was either like 20 and 25%. I'm not sure which one was which, but it's clearly, I mean, that's almost, actually, that's more than them combined, so...
Well, you got to think about it. Like, Sony and Microsoft just had that one event on the one day for like 2 hours, and then who's going to be talking about them 3 days afterwards? Whereas Nintendo's having something every day of the show.
Of staggering things, staying relevant the entire time, and they even like sprinkled out little announcements here and there, like the Pac-Man announcement and the 3DS game.
I was literally about to go to bed after a long day of like catching up with E3, because after I had a class related to work all day last week, so you know, I didn't shut off my phone, but I definitely after I accidentally had the Star Fox thing spoiled for me at like 10 just before the actual digital event, right. I just turned my phone's internet off. I said, you know, I cannot view anything more. I had Game Dad Grant to text me the link to the YouTube video so I could just type it in when I got back to my hotel. And I watched it, and then I spent a lot of time, you know, just processing it and trying to follow in. And, you know, going to dinner and stuff like that I was doing out of town. But then I was just about to go to bed around just before midnight, and then suddenly Pac-Man's announced, like, at 11:55 at night. It was kind of wild, but yeah, you're right. I mean, they just kept showing up. They didn't have to wait till, you know, the next morning to start a whole new thing. It was, you didn't know what to expect.
Right, and then they kept changing up what games they were giving time to. They started doing some indie games near the end, which I thought was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately I wasn't able to watch. Well, I didn't see any of the Smash Brothers tournament, which really bums me out, especially after hearing you guys talk about it now. But I did catch some of the Treehouse events because my class was also pretty horrid, and the teacher was kind of like a guy who came in and he didn't really actually teach professionally. He just knew the software, and my original teacher had to leave because his wife was giving birth or something, so we had this guy, and he was pretty ineffective, so I just started doing the stuff in the book and skipping ahead. So eventually I was like, you know what, I can watch the Treehouse right now, why not? So I had my work computer up, and then I had you know, the class computer, and I just had the Treehouse up on one of them, and I was doing stuff on the other one, and I didn't get to listen to most of it. I did, during a break, I caught some of the 3DS Super Smash Brothers stuff, but it was fun just watching it with no sound. Yeah. And
I think... sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I spoke about this in the last podcast, so I don't want to elaborate myself too much, but it was so great to see them just really give so much time to people who seem to really love Nintendo, to put them in front of the TV with these games, play them, talk about them, and not even focus on like trying to kick each other's ass in Smash Brothers, but hey, just don't move for a sec. Let me try this on you. Check this out. You know, and they were really just showing the software off in ways that nobody really ever gets a chance to. It was awesome.
Yes. It's so different than what like the other presentations were, where it was just a bunch of game trailers, but you never actually got to see anybody play the game, you know?
Right.
I like actually seeing the gameplay, giving more time to the games rather than the graphics or the decapitated heads and bullet storms.
Right.
And I think, you know, I'm sure there's some people that were tuned in the entire time, and, you know, I wish I had time for that these days. But even though I didn't, there was just so much information going out there that, like, I'm going to be set for months. Like, you know, I feel like learning more about Splatoon. I'll watch that Treehouse section, or maybe I feel like I want to know something about Project Codename Steam or whatever.
Well, yeah, because they do have those at least parts of them on YouTube, don't they?
Oh yeah, I think everything must be archived somewhere.
Yeah, because that did give me some hope. I was like, you know, I may not be able to watch it all right now or hear it, but I could go back and check it. And I think it shows a lot. I think I said this last episode, but it gives me the impression that they have a lot of confidence in their games. If they're going to show you more than just a trailer. and they're going to let you play, and they're going to let people possibly screw up while playing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, unless you guys have any more comments, we can move on from the presentation, because there's a lot of stuff after the presentation to get to.
Yeah, sure.
Let's get to the games, man.
Let's jump right into the biggest, arguably the biggest. I mean, I know everyone's opinions are different, but arguably the biggest game to come out of that. And I don't know how surprised you guys were that this was even brought up, but The Legend of Zelda came to E3, and we got to see more than a screenshot, more than a... I think when Twilight Princess was revealed, or not Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword, it was just the art, a single piece of art, you know, that
right.
first year.
Yeah.
Right, here, with Fi, the sword, right?
Yeah. And I thought it was pretty, it was like a reverse trolling, where Hiranuma, you know, he showed us what looked like a still shot, or maybe it was like a slightly moving image, like almost like he had a GIF, you know, or a GIF, if you prefer, of a screen from Zelda. And then out of nowhere, he's like, oh yeah, peace. And then he whisks away himself, and then suddenly it kicks into an awesome trailer, you know?
Yes.
It's just so beautiful. I have the screen, the HD res direct feed screenshot as my wallpaper at work now. I've watched the trailer multiple times. It's so damn beautiful. And there's still a lot to be known about what the game's going to actually entail. But from a visual standpoint, it's fantastic. So let me throw it to you guys. Hendrik, I mean, how did you feel about that trailer, man?
Well, I mean, first of all, it just looked gorgeous. I mean, I know that the Wii U supposedly is, or definitely is, a little behind the competitors, but you could not tell it from that trailer, man. It just
absolutely
looked
not.
So nice. I mean, the lighting, the part where the clouds just came over, was just looked perfect. The grass swaying.
Doesn't it feel like this is the apex of justification for Nintendo doesn't need to have matched power to its competitors?
Agreed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, everything's relative, first of all. So it's definitely going to be a big step up from Skyward Sword, and so. You know, maybe, though I'm sure there'll be some game that matches it or outdoes it on the other things, but there's not going to be another Zelda game like that. And, you know, as for the trailer itself, I mean, first we had Aonuma's comments, which I thought he was definitely saying all the right things. I mean, I almost feel like the fact that he was so vague means that people at this point are just thinking the best, like, oh, this means that it's going to be a huge world, or if you don't like a huge world, oh, this means that everything's going to be perfectly designed,
right.
And like, no one, there's no way to be proven right or wrong at this point. So I am a little worried that there could be some disappointment, you know, if it doesn't match up exactly what everyone's thinking. But for me, I mean, I'm a huge original Zelda fan. Like, I still consider it the best game ever, and so when he name checked that, obviously I'm going to like that. And you know, else than that, I don't think we know that much. I hope that we get a lot of cool exploration. I hope that you know, they kind of build on what Skyward Sword had with these kind of pre-dungeon areas that are really well designed and interesting, but kind of put them together and connect them into one kind of cohesive world would be awesome.
Yeah, I think that's where he's going. I mean, that was my interpretation, of course, but it seems pretty apparent that these, the past Zelda games, since even Ocarina of Time, have all been stepping stones and learning experiences. I think that I don't think they've ever gone backwards. You know, maybe they've forgotten something, a smaller aspect, but they've never gone backwards as they've been developing 3D Zelda games. Even the overworld in Wind Waker, which is an ocean, and everyone complains about how slow the travel is, and even the islands, and maybe they're small islands and that kind of thing, but that was more a technical limitation. That's why we had the faster boat in the remake, the HD remake, and the islands themselves, he mentioned, didn't he, in that description about how he actually liked that overworld and that sense of exploration,
yeah.
But he was sad that you were limited to a door for every single one of them. And
I like the idea of kind of the first puzzle being figuring out how to get to a place.
Yeah.
And I hope that means that, you know, in Ocarina of Time, there's just kind of like one entrance to Lake Hylia. You go in there, then later on down the road, there's a secret kind of hidden backdoor way, but it's not really, you never really feel like it's part of the world. It's just kind of a separate screen.
Yeah.
It'll be really cool if there's lots of different ways to approach, and maybe as you get more powerful, you get new items, you know, things change, and you can kind of access in different ways.
Yeah, you know, let me say one more thing, and then maybe we'll get Lou's opinion here, too, but the one thing that mm-hmm. I've always wanted ever since pretty much Ocarina of Time was, and maybe Skyrim did this, which I know is being the game is being kind of related to Skyrim a lot. I've never played it, so I don't really know, but I've always wanted to be able to play a Zelda game where you go into an overworld. Perhaps it looks like Twilight Princesses, or maybe it's a little bit more, I guess ideally now I'd want Skyward Swords, but like you said, kind of connected. But I want to be able to walk up towards what looks like a forest. Oh, that's the Lost Woods, okay. Well, it's the Lost Woods, not necessarily because it, you know, loops different sections of the grid or something, but because it's so dense that if you don't keep track of where you're going, you might turn around and not be able to see the exit, and then not know where you are. You can just walk in between any two trees you can just go between, because there isn't some sort of arbitrary, you know, tree map on the wall, and then you can go into an actual door. I want to be able to do that and then maybe find a river, and I can choose to go one way on the river or the other way. And that's kind of my bearings, and if I was to stray away, well, I want to find that river again, because I can at least travel up that to a lake, presumably, eventually, and explore like that. And maybe that requires something too big for Zelda as far as an overworld, but to be able to walk anywhere and go into the woods in any way, that kind of thing, is kind of what he was alluding to in that opening discussion, I think, and that's really exciting. To be able to maybe climb up the mountain, not just in one corridor like you could in Ocarina of Time. You could actually, you know, go up on multiple, every side of it has an entrance, which takes a lot of creative energy, intuitiveness, I guess, in design. It's really a daunting task they're setting up for themselves, but I'm excited for them to try. So, Lou, what are you thinking about this new Zelda, man?
Well, what you were just talking about sounds exactly like Zelda 1 from, like, the first times I was playing it. Oh, right. I got to a river. Let's go up. All right, that didn't leave an area. Let's go down from there, you know?
Yeah.
You just keep exploring until you hit dead ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very excited when that was, like, the first footage they showed was the original Legend of Zelda. And then I think they followed it up with Wind Waker, which I also love because you're free to explore right from the start. Well, not right from the start, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, and you can even go kind of against the wind. Like, as long as you're not going directly against it, you can slowly creep to islands that maybe you're not supposed to go to yet.
Right.
Yeah. You're pretty much free to go where you want, and then you're going to hit roadblocks that eventually you were overcome, but you can make a note of them later and then go back to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very excited to see that. The art and the graphical representation was much better than Skyward Sword. I'm sorry, I wasn't a big fan of the way Skyward Sword looked. I felt that it was too watercolory, too soft, you know? The colors in this new trailer, very bright, and they were popping, right? When that thing's running through the forest shooting laser beams out of its face. I mean, it was bright, it was popping, it got me excited.
Yeah, it's true, and I really love the Skyward Sword look. I totally know what you're saying, though, about the kind of hazy watercolor look, and that was, you know, the intention to it, but seeing this that kind of art style, but sharpened and crisp in the in HD, I did not for a second think, oh, I wish it was more like Skyward Sword. It seemed like an evolution of Skyward Sword. But almost an evolution of Skyward Sword and Wind Waker together. It was almost like cel-shading with the Skyward Sword mentality or something.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
And I'm totally cool with that. I mean, I just read something, maybe I might have been in the same thread that Jargon Hendrick just commented in before the show started, but how do you guys feel about this look versus what we saw in that first demo a few years back where Link was fighting the, you know, the Goma or whatever it was in that kind of cathedral-looking place?
Right.
Do you want to see something like that, like a Twilight Princess-style HD, or are you really psyched about this instead?
I thought it was a huge improvement over that. That one I never really was very psyched by when I saw it. I mean, that was kind of like, all right, what would you expect from an HD Zelda? Like, just the most basic kind of unimaginative version? That's what that looked like to me. And this was completely the opposite direction. Just completely beautiful and artistic.
I think that old demo really showed off what the Wii U was capable of. But then here, we're seeing what Nintendo actually wants to do with it and what's even beyond that. Almost like, you know, the old demo is, oh yeah, this is easy. You know, this is, we could do this, but we're going to do this instead. And I haven't seen other competitors do something as beautiful as this in this kind of art style.
You know,
I've seen competitors do really great realistic graphics. And in fact, from the little I've seen of I've seen a little bit of Microsoft show. On YouTube, there's been a lot of Sony ads playing. So I've seen quite a bit of their footage, and I watch things in HD, so I definitely get to see it as it's supposed to be. I'm not going to lie, it looks impressive. The graphics look impressive, but they're not this, though. This is a whole different realm. You know, so I'm pretty excited for what they're doing here.
Super excited.
Yeah. Is there anything else you guys want to mention about The Legend of Zelda and what we saw there? I mean, we talked about the exploration. We talked about the graphics. The only thing we didn't really talk about was the trailer itself. Is there anything, like, I guess tell me this, and maybe we can wrap it up after that. What was your most exciting part of the trailer? What got you? What wowed you the most? Hendrik?
Well, I like that the whole world reacted when this crazy monster came out. It wasn't just Zelda reacting, but... I'm sorry, Link. God, that's a Nintendo mistake 101.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Should we just end this call with you?
I might be kicked off forever after that. It wasn't just Link reacting, but those shepherds that were there ran off, and the goats. And, you know, first some of the goats reacted because they were from the side where the monster was coming from, and then the other ones did as he started firing his lasers. And that made me think that maybe, you know, these shepherds that are there, any NPCs, they're not just going to be standing there no matter what happens. You know, who hasn't, like, you know, taken out their sword and started hacking at an NPC or tried to, and to see them not react at all? Well, this might be a case where they might be a little more living and breathing.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the actual action, I mean, it was weird, I thought. You know, that you had this laser monster and this weird laser arrow. But it didn't seem, like, completely out of place in the Zelda world. I mean, we remember those enemies who kind of spin around and shoot lasers at you from Ocarina of Time. They might even be originally from Link to the Past.
They're called Bombos or something, right?
Right, and they, you know, you kill them with bombs. So, I mean, that's the old hat at this point. Some people I know said that it was too sci-fi looking for them, but I didn't get that feeling.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that, just to touch on your point. It threw me for a loop, too, for a second, because you expect it to be kind of an organic, rural experience, and then suddenly there's this giant laser shooting things and blowing up, like, in a Michael Bay style. But then I realized, after a split second, I was like, well, lasers have been in this series since the beginning. They really have.
Yep.
And I thought about Skyward Sword again, and none of the bosses there did any... Like, this creature didn't do anything different than those bosses might. So it's really not that different, and that the arrow, which almost looked like it was like a Xenoblade weapon or something.
Right.
It was the Monado arrows, and it didn't seem that out of touch. I mean, I think it's what the fire and light arrows of Ocarina of Time might have been had the graphical capability been there. You know, so I definitely reacted weird at first, but then it kind of calmed down, and I think I'm. You know, I'm just going to wait to see what they're going to do. Maybe they'll do a whole technological advancement storyline, you know, steampunk, that thing that, you know, steampunk everyone wants, or maybe they won't,
I thought one thing that kind of made sense given what we've seen, and this is almost completely pure speculation, so I don't think I'm right, but, you know, it was kind of this rural-looking area, and it would kind of make sense if these monsters coming, these kind of more science fiction style monsters with strange technology came and kind of upset that, and that's how Zelda Link gets pulled into the pulled into the adventure.
Tingle gets pulled.
That's how Metroid gets pulled into the adventure.
Metroid, oh jeez, yeah, it could be. You know, stranger things have happened.
Well, one thing I will add is that I am a little worried that this won't actually come in 2015. I've learned from Nintendo to expect delays when it comes to Zelda games. So I would be probably, you know, I hope that it does, but I'm not going to get my hopes up for that.
All right, well, to play devil's advocate and also be the ridiculously hopeful son of a bitch, as I usually am, I think it's totally plausible. If it comes in, you know, holiday 2015, that's, you know, a good 16 months at least. And not to say that they're really far along now, but we've had games, you know, come, like, great games be created in short time spans. I'm guessing they have all their manpower behind this. They may even have some of the framework done with Skyward Sword, depending on what control scheme they're going with.
Right.
So I think the core game could definitely be done. I think what might slow them down is, you know, keeping their promise of being able to go everywhere and designing the world correctly might slow them down. But
right. I mean, to be fair, I think they did say last E3 they came close to showing it off. So it might have been in development longer than we think.
You know what? That's true. I do believe that was said. So give that another year then, yeah. And
right.
So maybe they have a lot more to show. They just didn't, you know, they wanted to not give it to us all at once.
Yeah.
So I guess we can move forward then to
sure.
The other big game. I mean, everything was kind of a big game in many respects, but Smash Brothers. Yeah, it's definitely not a small game, you know?
No, I'd say it's my personal biggest, but...
There you go. So Smash Brothers kind of had its blowout, and I think it was time because if it's going to come out in the holiday season, they don't really have any time to have a big showing of it anymore. They could do a Nintendo Direct, but this was their chance to really show it off live and show it off well. And, I mean, they had two or three different announcements in the digital presentation itself just for Smash Bros.
Right.
They had the Mii Fighters, they had Palutena as a character, and then they also, I think, had...
Well, they had the little Amiibos part.
And then, yeah, then the Amiibos. So there was, like, three different related things. We'll get to Amiibo in a minute, but... it definitely hyped me up successfully, and I know Mario Kart 8's out now, so it's almost unfair to say, well, I'm more hyped for Smash than Mario Kart now. But even if it hadn't been, this E3 would have pushed Smash Bros. Over the edge for me, between watching it and then going to play it live myself. So I guess let me ask you some kind of pointed questions to get the conversation going. How do you
sure.
feel about... You probably answered this in the thread itself, but what was your favorite reveal? Was it the Mii characters, Palutena, or Pac-Man?
Yeah, I haven't thought about that. I didn't actually answer that poll. I think... I have only played a little bit of Kid Icarus Uprising, so Palutena didn't do much for me. So, and then Pac-Man, as much as he's a classic character, to me... I just think of him as the arcade, you know, a little pixely thing, not like someone with legs and feet. So that's not as exciting to me either. So definitely I'm going to go for the Miis. And the fact that it's not just a Mii, you know, I was kind of expecting, oh, it's a Mii, he'll have a tennis racket, he'll have a bowling ball, and be an otherwise pretty boring character. The fact that they made him customizable and three different types of styles with the swordsman or the shooter character and the melee character. I thought it was, you know, it made me actually kind of hyped to try out this character that otherwise I think could have been just kind of like another also-ran type.
Right. Yeah, I think that did a lot to convince me that the Mii fighter was actually going to be diverse enough to matter. And wouldn't
right.
be just a skin, but it would actually be a fighter that you could get into and actually work on, you know?
Right.
Let's take a real short break, which we've never done a break in the middle of a topic before on this show in the 66 episodes we've had, but Joe is ready to join us, so we'll take a quick break, we'll get him on, and we'll keep talking about Smash Brothers. Oh, Okay, and we're back from that awkwardly timed break. And we now have Joe, my co-host Joe. How's it going?
Hello, good. Thanks for having me.
Welcome. Well, thanks for showing up.
No problem.
You keep saying no problem, and I keep thinking of Wave Race. No problem. Good.
Yeah,
okay.
I didn't play enough of that game.
Hendrik, no. Lou, you guys know what I'm talking about?
I played a lot of Wave Race.
And you don't know what I'm talking about? Or you do?
I do, vaguely.
The announcer.
Yeah. I really wanted that game. When that game was on the market and I didn't have an N64, I was so jealous.
Yeah, not to do an aside, really, but besides...
We're not giving our reviews of Wave Race 64? That's not the next...
We should, though. We should. We totally could. besides Metroid Prime 4, I honestly really do want another Wave Race really bad.
Yeah.
Was there one for GameCube? I can't remember.
Yes. Blue Storm. But there was no Wii version, and there has been no handheld version, so... We haven't seen one since, like, I guess 2001, because it was a release title for the GameCube. I think it was a release title, so...
Yeah.
I think I had Luigi's Mansion and Wave Race Blue Storm, so... So let's get back to the Smash Brothers discussion. Before we took our break, Hendrik had explained to us his thoughts on some of the new characters that were announced during this E3 show. Did you finish up your thoughts, Hendrik?
Yep.
I know it was kind of focused on the Miis themselves specifically, but just to reiterate, so those were your kind of favorite pick, or did we cut you off there?
Oh, no, yeah. Miis, I definitely were my favorite. Pac-Man's pretty cool. Palutena, not really, don't know much about her, but I'm happy for people who like her.
Yeah, totally. I mean, she was speculated, and it's kind of cool to see that vindicated a little bit.
Right.
You know, Lou, what are your thoughts on the new characters?
I am most excited about both Pac-Man and the Miis, but I am not excited about Palutena because it's just another, as I call it, a face character, a good guy, you know? Mm-hmm. I feel like the game is lacking bad guys. Right. Yeah. It's way more weighted towards good guys than bad guys. I mean, why not Medusa
or Dark
or Ridley?
Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Or Kraid or Mother Brain. Or Dark Pac-Man.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny how many people wanted Medusa. After Palutena was announced, I thought people were going to really rejoice, but a lot of people were just like, why wasn't it Medusa? But
I mean, why not Dracula from Castlevania? Or Dr. Wily?
Or Sigma? Castle from Castlevania.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
You know, it's really funny we're talking about Castlevania and Kid Icarus because I've listened to both soundtracks recently at work. Like, that was just my main music for the day. Today it was Kid Icarus Uprising, even though I've never played the game, but it's got great music. And then yesterday I listened to some guy has the top 75 Castlevania songs, and I was like, sure, okay, at least I won't have to listen to shit, you know. And it was really good. It was like a good almost 2 hours, I think, of music. So
awesome.
Sweet.
Good stuff. It would, you know, it's funny because with Kid Icarus I really don't know much about the series, and I like the music a lot, like I said, but I don't really know shit about the story or the characters. I don't really care too much, but I still want people to have them in the game, in Smash Brothers. I think that they're a nice addition. I think it makes people happy. Castlevania. I've never played a Castlevania game. Maybe I've dabbled in it for 2 seconds once, but like...
Interesting.
I don't
know.
What
are you doing with your life?
Really?
Yeah. Well, who are you?
I'm, what did I say last episode? I'm extreme knitting or something or whatever.
Yeah.
Next thing you're going to do is call Link Zelda.
Yeah, I wouldn't be such an ass hat.
Call Samus Metroid.
Oh, Josie.
Yeah, why not play
things
as a Metroid? That'd be awesome.
That'd be funky. That'd be interesting. But no, so I kind of wish, though, that Simon Belmont or Dracula or both were in this game. It'd be kind of cool to see some other franchises that are not touched upon, you know?
Actually, Lou, you know, there is a new villain in the game. On my Wii, we'll be able to play as Hitler now.
Oh, excellent. That's what I was just going to mention about the Mii Fighters. You can make anybody throughout history and throw them in the game, and that'll be hilarious.
Yeah, but
Hitler versus Shakespeare? I'm into it.
But that's the thing. My Pac-Man Mii is now defunct.
You know? It was so
now you can have Pac-Man versus Pac-Man me for the ultimate, right?
Oh, Mrs. Pac-Man.
Well, that should be like a character swap, you know, that they've done.
Yeah.
I would hope it would be. There's so many opportunities for things like that. And I don't know what, you know, let me ask that question to you guys. What would be your ultimate character swap if you could do one for all the known characters that we have right now? I mean, I know it's
all of those. I was going to say all of those Pokemon. There's too many Pokemons. I miss the Pokemon trainer.
Okay, well, I'm not exactly saying going back to a character. I'm saying, like, for instance, for the Animal Crossing character, the villager, I of course had to try him first thing when I got my hands on the game. However, I decided to try changing up the costume. So, in my Wii U battle, I actually changed it to not the girl villager, but there was two other villagers and available. Like, one was like the cracked out looking one. So I chose the cracked out looking one, and it's a full character difference. I mean, the face is different, the you know, the clothing, everything is different about it. With the female character, the hair is different, the body is slightly different shape. I mean, the Wii Fit Trainer is not just like a, you know, boob and a boobless one. It's like the male character, you know, and the female character. So it's different enough. So what would you do as far as a Switch? I mean, would you change a Pokemon to be a similar but different Pokemon, or would you, you know, Dr. Mario and Mario, or what would you do there?
Yeah. Yeah, Dr. Mario and Mario, maybe Luigi with the vacuum on his back. But, okay, you know, so they might need a whole new moveset, though.
So, like, Luigi with, you'd actually like to see maybe Luigi's Mansion Luigi in there.
Yeah, or maybe Paper Mario Mario.
That would be a cool one. Nice. Yeah, yeah, that's a good idea. And they paperize all the moves, you know.
All right, I'm going to work for Nintendo. See ya.
Link and female Link.
Okay, what about... Well, Link and Zelda, you're already kind of talking about that. Yeah. But that would be kind of funny. Although, since we don't know if it was a female Link, it'd be Link and, like, ambiguous Link.
Right.
But well, that's another example. Maybe Ganondorf and Demise or something.
Oh, yeah.
They're kind of sweet, you know? So, I don't know. Joe, do you have any ideas? We didn't ask this question last episode.
No, I feel like we've kind of talked about this subject. Maybe it was off air, but no, you know, I'm good. I like what the guest said, you know, that's fine.
So, I don't like that Zero Suit Samus is a different character than regular Samus. I think that's a cop-out.
Really?
Wasting space.
Here's the deal, though. As someone who used Sheik a lot, it was a little annoying always having to, like, go in as Zelda, and then you have to immediately do that one move to transform, and then you're basically down a move the whole match. So I do appreciate it. I understand it's a little bit weird having two slots for...
But you have two links.
Same print. You know. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. I guess it's just that, like, you know, Zelda can turn into Sheik, Samus can turn into Zero Suit, whereas Toon Link never, like, eats a magic apple and then becomes...
A real boy.
Normal Link.
I'm a real boy!
I can see that, but I'm happy she's her own character now. I mean, again, just because it gives her a more diverse moveset.
Won the Invitational tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah, in cheap form, though.
Was it? I don't know enough about, like, the competitive
scene.
It was
overtime.
It went to overtime because she like, ran away for the last minute or so.
For the last bit.
Let's face it, though.
Kirby's hard to send, though. Fighting against Kirby?
Yeah, that's why I play as Kirby.
I know. That's why my wife plays as Kirby.
Kirby's a good game. Good character.
My wife plays with Kirby. She doesn't even like Nintendo.
Really?
You know, it's funny because I showed Amy the championship match, and actually a couple of the matches, and we were both, I guess, pleasantly surprised, or just surprised, that the guy who was using Kirby didn't really do the down B very much, which that's like...
Oh, turning into a rock, yeah.
Yeah, most people I know that use Kirby, it's like...
It's a go-to.
70% of your moves, really.
I use that a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't use it, I don't know, hardly ever.
Not once. I didn't see it at all. I made that a mental note. I was like, why isn't he turning into an anvil?
Yeah. He also didn't use his up B move at all else than to save himself. Like, I think that's a good attack, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of a distance attack for him. I don't know. I use it a lot.
You know, not to segue necessarily, maybe it's okay, but I love Kirby's new Final Smash.
Have you it's much better. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the old one was kind of boring.
Yeah, the cooking thing. I mean, it was kind of cute when he was just cooking, you know, but to see it live too, at the Best Buy event, it was just so gratifying to see Kirby just slice the shit out of these enemies, and the way he does it, it's so gratifying. So that was pretty cool.
Plus, you know, if you remember it from Return to Dreamland, I mean, that was one of the big moments of that game, was pulling out these gigantic swords and just annihilating the world as a cute, adorable pink fluff.
We went over this, Joe, in the last episode. I can't know what you're talking about for less than $99.
I'm sorry.
Yes. Because apparently that's what the going price is, guys.
Yep.
On Amazon right now. It's like $99 for that game.
Yep.
Is that crazy? Anyway, I said I wouldn't dabble too much in past episode discussions, so I guess I want to ask now, the one big piece of information we learned about the 3DS version was actually that the release date slipped significantly to October 3rd. I keep saying jargon first. Hendrick.
Yes.
I mean, are you bummed about this? Are you okay with it? Are you happy about the slip?
That's for the 3DS version, right?
Yep. Holiday still for the Wii U.
Well, I do think that I'm still going to get the 3DS version just because I'm a Super Smash Brothers freak, but I do think I would have spent more time with it if it had been, on its own for longer. Like, I imagine the Wii U version is going to be right around the corner at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the version that, you know, has me more psyched, so.
Yeah, I mean, at worst, it'll probably be 10 weeks away. You know, that would put it right before Christmas, but if it's before Thanksgiving, it'll be only maybe 6 weeks.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
And go ahead, Luke.
I was going to say, I canceled my pre-order. I also canceled the 10 pre-orders I made for the local orphanage because I'm not happy with that move.
Well,
it was that upsetting.
Huh. Well, the Three Stooges are certainly bummed. That's a NES joke right there.
I get it. I remember that game.
What bums? Yes, Cracker Soup. What bums you out the most about that? I mean, were you thinking that you were going to have more time with it, or that you'd enjoy it more if it wasn't? Like, I don't know. Explain the logic.
It's exactly what Hendrick said. I'm not canceling my pre-order or anything, but you know, there's just less time now to play the 3DS version because the Wii one's going
to
be right around the corner.
You don't have to trade it in, though. Come on, you make it sound like it's a one for one. No, I know what you're saying though, because if you're at home, you think you're going to be playing the Wii U one.
Yeah, because you don't have to play on a TV. You can just play on the gamepad.
Well, you also have a gamepad called the 3DS. So
what?
But still, I mean, there's still the appeal of the bigger screen on the gamepad.
Absolutely.
And I'm not going to lie, HD in general is a big factor for me. To see it big and crisp is a lot different than seeing it on the small screen. And when I tried it out at the Best Buy, I tried out both versions. The 3DS one was a little bit, it wasn't hard to see, but it was just different. It felt different. And I don't know if I'm going to have enough time to get past that and love it before I get the Wii U version and want to play them both simultaneously.
Now, did I see this right on the 3DS version? Like, those dark black lines, you can make them disappear or be as thick as you want?
Correct.
Am I correct on that?
Yep.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
That is cool. I just love seeing how, like, again, with Sakurai games, like, he will just go to the nth degree as far as just options or just stuff in the game. Because that was something that I think people, you know, probably half the people who saw that were like, oh, great, dark outlines, because you need to see them more, again, you know, on the smaller screen. And then probably other half of the people were like, oh, that totally ruins the visual appeal or whatever it was. So now, not only can you turn them on and off, you can even, if you're somewhere in between, if you're like, oh, I like dark outlines, but not that much of a dark outline.
Right. Yeah, he really puts everybody else to shame when it comes to options.
Crazy.
Yeah, well, he puts Nintendo to shame in many respects.
I know. Like Mario Kart. I just want a Mario Kart that has that same level of customization.
Yeah,
that
would be insane. Mario Kart with black lines. Oh, my gosh.
Can you imagine?
A Sakurai-made Mario Kart would, like, the world would implode on itself.
I'll tell you, between how glorious Mario Kart 8 looks and how glorious Smash Brothers looks on the Wii U, I really am now all in for a Super Smash Kart. I'm so in. I was kind of, it felt weird to me at first, but screw that. Screw old me, because that sounds like a great idea. With black lines, without black lines, I don't care. I think it would be pretty cool.
So this is a Mario Kart with all franchises, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And items that are inspired from different games and everything. It would be a levels, you know, it would be a whole thing.
Got
a whole kit and caboodle. But anyway, not to digress into that. At least the Wii U version is staying in holiday 2014. So,
yeah,
that's nice. Whatever that means. Maybe it's Kwanzaa. Maybe it'll come out on Kwanzaa. You know, that's a holiday that we often do not celebrate enough. Anyway, I mean, I guess we can move forward to a somewhat related topic, Amiibo. Now, was that quite a shock to you, or were you expecting that, Hendrik?
Well, yeah, I mean, they'd kind of built it up enough talking about it at the investor meetings and everything that I expected to have some kind of showing. The fact that it ended up, the one thing, I'm not particularly interested in this. I mean, I don't like junk, having junk around my house. Like, people, because I'm a Nintendo fan, people buy me, like, things like that a lot, and I'm like, what am I going to do with this? But I do like that the one thing that I say will makes it somewhat likely that I could get it is that you can use the same ones for lots of different games. So right. It's not like I'm going to have to, you know, buy 20 Mario figurines. Like, if I've got Mario Party, Smash Brothers, Mario Kart, and I can use one Mario figure for all of them, it makes it slightly likely that I could get one, at least a tryout.
Well, what's your take on the idea of, say, Mario? Well, maybe Mario's a bad idea because he's so versatile, but say someone buys the Pit amiibo. You know, it works in Smash Brothers, but there's no Pit in Mario Kart or Mario Party. Do you think that they're going to still let you use it in some fashion, or do you think it's going to be restricted to the actual characters that are in the games? And my fear for that is that it then makes certain amiibo worth more than others, because they're more versatile, and so that seems like a weird thing for me, and I don't know how they're going to overcome that, really. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
I hadn't even thought of that, and, you know, it's a good point. Yeah, and that kind of worries me, because also, if they do make a Pit 1, then the natural thing is that it would be in a Kid Icarus game, and then if they do have it, will it be, like, basically mandatory in a Kid Icarus game? So... Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they're going to want to make it have a point if it's only been used in Smash Brothers. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a good question. There's a lot I don't... I've never played Skylanders or Disney Infinity, so I don't really even conceptually understand it that well.
Yeah. But even then, those games are built around the amiibo, or, well, the equivalency anyway, while here we're supposed to have way different franchises all utilizing them. So, I'm personally hesitant. I'm excited just to have a cool figure or two, because it's really hard to get cool figures in America that actually aren't just little cheap pieces of plastic that are actually nicely designed. So at least this kind of gives us that opportunity, but I'm not too big on junk either, although I do have a lot of it, I'm not going to lie. But if it's Nintendo junk, at least that has a better value than non-Nintendo junk.
Pet.
But, Lou, are you... did we lose you?
No, I'm still here.
Okay, good.
But
okay.
I have 2% left on my battery, so here's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
I'm going to go over to the local Starbucks, which should have power, and then rejoin you chaps.
Okay, all right, interesting. All right.
My thoughts on Amiibo, you can probably skip me. I don't really care about them. I mean, yeah.
Okay, listeners, that's his thoughts. Lou, we'll catch you. We'll catch you back when you can join in. Cause, for the listeners, we didn't really explain, but Lou, his power is out because there was a big storm that went through his way, and I think Joe, who lives nearby, must be super rich and have his own generators because he's fine.
Yep, that's the explanation.
Or he's got Hamtaro on a wheel powering his house.
Oh man, awesome!
And Luke, could you grab me a frappuccino, please?
I will. Would you like the non-fat?
No, as much fat as possible, please.
Oh, extra fat.
Extra fat.
Extra bacon.
Bacon hanging out of the cup. All right, that's the perfect segue to let you go. So, yeah, right. go hook up somewhere and, you know, maybe get some random Starbucks folk to join in. Find some Nintendo fans. Look for
yeah,
the guy
you could do like a man on the street.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I like
go
it.
Go ask people's
negative,
thoughts on Amiibo and they'll be like...
Negative World Podcast, first man on the street. I like this.
What the hell's Amiibo,
Me on
freak?
The street. We'll call it the Me on the Street. There you go.
All right,
we'll catch you back soon.
I'll call you guys back.
Okay. Later. All right. So, listeners, you know, we're just doing this cut live. We're not breaking for this one.
Do it live.
Lou will be back soon. We know his thoughts on Amiibo. He's not a fan. We know Joe's from the last podcast, and we know mine. So how about we just jump forward then to the next game in the list. And you know what? You know, let's take a quick break, actually, to gather our thoughts, because I don't want to miss out on Lou and certain ones. I know he wanted to talk about certain games. So let's take a quick break, listen to some tunes, and we'll come back and we'll talk about games some more. Alright, and we're back from the break. Lou is officially gone on his trek to find electricity. And so it's just the three of us. And so what we're going to do, we're going to talk about some games that... I keep wanting to say jargon first. I'm so used to calling it jargon.
Fine. I can go by either name.
I know. I just like talking to you guys with your real names. But Hendrik, you have an interest in Splatoon, do you?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was the big surprise of the show for me, like completely unexpected, and I thought that it looked pretty awesome. I mean, it looks like the kind of game you really have to try to understand, but from what we've seen, I'm definitely, you know, I want to pick it up and give it a go as soon as I can. I'd say that the most exciting thing about it is that, you know, You watch the other conferences and you see, like, you know, basically 100 shooters and they all look exactly the same. This one, on the other hand, like, basically turned that on its head. It looked completely fresh, completely different. Not just the family-friendly style to it, but just, like, the way you go about playing, the way you traverse the world, being able to swim in the ink, I just thought looked completely brilliant. Being able to scale walls that you couldn't otherwise get up by spraying ink on it. I mean, just an awesome mechanic that I, you know, just shows the creativity of that team. And it's, you know, not even just killing people. That's not the goal. It's trying to, you know, cover your territory. Just seems like something that's, you know, well, it uses the same kind of gameplay style as a traditional shooter. It's just completely a new take on it.
And what do you think about the gamepad usage? Because it seems to be a game that really is trying to use that in not so much, I mean, in some novel ways, but just in general. They want to make use of it.
Remind me again, it basically has a map and you can fast travel, is that right?
Yes, they use it for, it's an area map. It lets you see live progress of how much of the map is covered by what, you know, colors and what teams. It allows you to instantly tap and warp to your friends, to your teammates, stuff like that. And I think it was up for debate. I don't know if it was confirmed if there was off-TV play or not. But, right. But yeah, I mean, how do you feel about that?
I think that's cool. You know, I like the fast travel idea because, you know, no one wants to be left out of an exciting firefight. And if everything's set up so that you can join quickly, it should be a pretty good advantage. So that'll give you a reason to want to get your ink everywhere.
No one wants to, you know, have a battle mode in Mario Kart, in other words, where you're on the other side of the level when there's nobody by you.
Exactly.
And like 1 minute left, and you're both driving in the opposite direction.
Plus, I can't say I've tried that yet.
There's just seems like all kinds of strategic uses for that. You know, like you could purposefully have someone. Like, okay, you one person go and infiltrate, and then we'll paint our area, and then, you know, at this point, 2/3 of the way through the match or something, we'll all warp to your location, and then suddenly everyone's behind enemy lines, right? So
that's some good strategy right there.
Well, especially if you can hide too, because you can just, you know, spray a little bit and just hide in a corner maybe that's inconspicuous, and then, you know, like you said, does everyone warp to it at the same time to kind of bash everybody?
Yep. But they have those grenades for balance on people who want to hide, right?
The online mode is going to be pivotal, I think, to this. You know, because the strategy is important, like Joe said, I think that you're really going to need voice chat for this one to work. And, you know, it's been done and well in Monster Hunter, I hear. It's just Nintendo needs to show that they can do it well. And I hope there's a lot of different modes. I hope that there's a lot of customization, a lot of different levels. You know, just the things that you come to expect in shooting games. For as boring as they can be, you know, the competitors certainly have handled that well with games like Halo and Call of Duty. So I hope that you know, they're up to the task in those aspects.
Well, my concern right now is, I guess this game is being designed, or presented anyway, as a strictly online multiplayer game. So does that mean it's going to have no single player fun to it? Or if you only have two people, do you have to go online to enjoy it? Will there be bots? I'm curious to see what that's going to be like, because I don't always have seven other people to play games with. Even Mario Kart, people are having trouble sometimes. You know, they hop on and it's not everyone's peak times, you know. You can always play with maybe strangers online, but it's this thing about, you could argue that, well, playing with a bot would be no different than playing with a stranger, but, you know, what if you're Lou with no power and you just happen to have enough juice in your Wii U battery, to play? Do you have, you know, crazy ideas like that.
Right.
And I'm just kind of a big advocate for single player modes in games. I think that you need to service both the multiplayer aspect and the single player in everything, pretty much. At least if you're going to pay full price for a game, I don't know. I've never seen a package where it was just multiplayer and it was worth, you know, $60. So,
right. You know what's interesting is that this game, when I was, you know, I do that thread, the who's working on what tracker.
Mm-hmm.
When I was researching for that, I saw that this game is made by the guys who make, the guy who makes Animal Crossing, and it seemed like a strange match. But you know, they make awesome games, and they do have some experience on online. So hopefully they can take that, and even in voice chat. So hopefully they can take those and apply them.
So, Lou or Joe, do you guys have any thoughts about Splatoon you want to mention?
Well, for me, it's all about the price point. I mean, like you guys were saying, is it going to just be strictly all online, you know? Or are they going to have some sort of single player mode? If not, if it's all going to be online, you know, I think $40 is a reasonable price point for that kind of game, because realistically, how deep could it be?
Right. I'm a little concerned about that, too. I mean, you have all these different levels, but how varied are they going to be? Are they going to be interesting enough? What's going to keep it from getting stale, even if it's still kind of fun? I mean, even I've had my days where I got sick of Perfect Dark back in the day, you know? You just kind of get used to things, and things don't feel new. Will there be DLC? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Questions that, of course, will get answered in some sort of Nintendo Direct at some point, I'm sure. And they promised it for 2015, so it's not like it's coming soon. Well, I guess with that, we can just move forward then, if you guys are all spent on the ink.
Yeah, the ink the ink discussion is all dried up. Let's move on.
There we go. Thank you.
There it is.
Thank you. There was an article that I read today where some company that tracks Twitter action and activity did a report, and they released it that Nintendo had 47% of all E3-related tweets throughout the week. And that beats the competition of 20 and 25% for either Microsoft or Sony. I didn't remember which order it was, but so, you know, it beat them both combined. So I'm not surprised to see that Captain Toad was trending. Then again, I'm sure Amy was just, like, tweeting nonstop about it, and that's probably what it was.
Oh, yeah. She's a Twitter fiend.
Captain Toadette. Yes. Hey, is there going to be a Captain Toadette, you think?
Sure.
That'd be cool.
Two-player Captain Toad.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
That'd Although, be hard.
As long as it's not Captain Toad Red and Captain Toad Blue, because that would suck.
Yeah.
Anyway, callback. So, yeah, Captain Toad looks really great. I know I spoke a lot about it on the last podcast. Lou, what do you think, man?
Well, Joe can attest to this because he was here playing Super Mario 3D World with me a lot
That's
of the time.
True.
And
That's true.
Those stages were a nice breath of fresh air from the actual running around as a cat, you know? little puzzle, you take it slow, you got to think, you got to figure things out. It was a nice change of pace, and I think I made the comment while Joe and I were playing that I would like a whole game of just these levels. Mm-hmm. I would be happy with that. And again, it's going to come down to price point. How deep is the game? How many levels are they going to include? And what's the price going to be? Again, this is another game where I see it being like a $40 price point, unless they have it chock full of, you know, all sorts of different levels, different worlds, different modes. I don't know what else to say.
I'm expecting that, but you know, they're planning for a retail release for this. So do you think that they're going to release it maybe at a lower price point disc, or do you think they're going to put so much shit in there that it's going to be worth $60?
Well, I think Donkey Kong was released at $50, right? Tropical Freeze, I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a huge value for that kind of game. So I could see him doing that for this game if it's got the same number of levels and, you know, maybe replayability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I fully expected to have extensive levels, at least kind of like 8 worlds, maybe 8 levels kind of thing, you know, in the same vein as previous, you know, platforming games. I guess you could call it a platformer, kind of. But
yeah, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe like the Toad pulled an onion out of the ground, like Super Mario Bros. 2, could shoot it or throw it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited. I'm down. Put me down. It's 10 pre-orders. Orphanage back in business, baby.
Oh, man. So glad the orphanage is back in business, because that was really, really sad. Okay, so we'll kind of step away from Captain Toad very quickly, but only to segue straight ahead into another Mario-themed game that was announced, Mario Maker. I try to say these things, I don't know why, with this kind of weird intonation, but like I'm presenting an award at the Emmys or something. Mm-hmm. And the winner is Mario Maker.
Yay!
Okay. So Mario Maker was leaked and, you know, correctly confirmed at E3, which I think was one of the nicest surprises of the whole week. I was just watching some footage of the game online shortly before the show started recording, and there's something so intuitive about watching people just make these levels and do some cool, crazy shit. I think it's going to unleash a part of me that I haven't felt since I was like 7 years old. When I was in elementary school, I used to draw little video game levels in my notebook, you know, and they'd be Mario or Pitfall type levels where there's pits and but there'd be like alternate paths like in Mega Man, and it'd be like really crude but awesome drawings, and I hope they're still somewhere packed away. But that was the first inkling of I ever wanted to maybe get into the game industry, which I did not do anything remotely close to that. But I had this creative itch to express myself that way, and so it's kind of cool that I'll be able to finally do that. Not that people haven't been able to with other tools, but to get a tool set direct from Nintendo, which you know is going to be designed not to do everything, but to do everything that it can right and intuitively, I think it's going to be an excellent package. I mean, how do you guys feel about this, Hendrik?
I'm not the type of guy who really spends a lot of time doing these, you know, do-it-yourself kind of level creator stuff, but you know, I'm just excited to get it only just to give myself access to what other people make. Because I know, you know, there's people on Negative World who really are good at this stuff, put a lot of time into it, and it'll be cool to see what they come up with. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if Nintendo used this kind of as an opportunity to release some crazy levels that they designed themselves. Because you know they're going to have to show you how it's done. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if they had some kind of level pack in there of just completely mind-blowing, wild stuff made by the Nintendo guys themselves.
Well, I think you're on the right path, because From what we've seen, the demo that was at E3 had, you know, an opportunity for a sandbox mode where you can do whatever you want, but it also had a lot of Nintendo-made levels that you could then edit yourself. So presumably you could also play them yourself. I really do think that you hit the nail on the head when you said that while you're not so much interested in actually making the levels, you're interested in playing everyone else's, because there's two kinds of people that this can cater to. The creative types who've always wanted to make their own levels, and the people who just want to play in more Mario levels. And now you're going to pretty much have infinite Miyamotos of probably arguably a lesser quality, but, you know, Miyamotes, we'll call them. And you're going to have all these people submitting great levels, and I'm pretty sure that the goal is to have them all uploadable to Miiverse and shareable in that sense, and I guarantee they're going to have a situation where the best of the best rise to the top, you know? Kind of like they're doing with the Mario Kart replays and everything, and that's going to be their goal. So, I mean, this is going to be pretty tremendous, I think. And I'm guessing that the next Mario game itself will be I would think it'd be a 3D Mario, because this is going to kind of cater to the 2D Mario experience for a little while. I think they might hold off on working on that for a little bit. Right. Let everyone else.
I was happy to see that they're not. They've already said that they're not just going to have original Mario and new Super Mario, but also have some other stuff. Maybe we might get Mario 2, Mario 3, Mario World.
So you knew that, because in the last episode, I was really clueless on it, and I think, Joe, you dropped some knowledge on us with that, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I agree, because Mario World is my favorite Mario graphical style. And if they can include not just the graphical styles, but the actual attributes that made those games special, such as a Kuribo shoe or a Mario cape or even Yoshi. I don't know how Yoshi would necessarily play into other styles if you did switch it, but it would be really cool to see maybe more versatility in that sense. And while they haven't confirmed anything, they've still speculated that they're working on it and trying to anyway.
You know, one thing that I thought was kind of interesting to see was when they first announced this game, I kind of had a thought wondering about what someone like Miyamoto or the other people who have designed the you know, actual 2D Mario games, if they were sitting there thinking like, oh, they're just, you know, they're just cheapening my craft, you know, or like people are going to make these insane Mario games that are just, you know, they're doing it wrong or something like that. That they might think of it as some bastardization of their, you know, their level design philosophy or something. But then there was video from one of the show floors where it was like Miyamoto was actually there demoing this game to a kid, and he was kind of like giving the kid suggestions. And one of his suggestions was, I think it was something like if you stack like 8 trampolines on top of each other, then they'll start bouncing on their own, and that can create some interesting situations or something. So it was just kind of funny. It was just kind of and to get that question answered, that apparently, you know, someone like Miyamoto is totally on board with just letting people use this as a blank canvas and go nuts with it.
Well, and I think that's because Nintendo has to play it with a certain level of safety and a certain level of fairness, that everyone should be able to get into certain levels, and, you know, all their games should be beatable by the masses, as many people as possible. Now you're going to have people really making challenging levels or weird levels that maybe don't make too much sense from a design standpoint, but are fun to play through anyway, that Nintendo just can't do in a standard Mario game. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to worry about feeding that craving for people, because they're going to have people feeding it for themselves.
Yep.
So it's a pretty cool thing. I mean, do you feel like it's been way too long and this should have happened a long time ago, or do you think this might be the right time now that we have the gamepad?
The biggest reason why I feel like this is the right time is because I feel like this is one of those times where people are in one of those like 2D Mario saturation modes or whatever. Like, in other words, I don't think people need to see another 2D Mario from Nintendo for a while. But for those that just like can't get enough, but not in like an addiction kind of way, but just in a way where
we're back on the tarmac, I see.
I know.
We're on the tarmac, or maybe someone's in a snowstorm and they just open the door wall, or
Yeah. Lou, how's it going over there?
Oh, man. You got me hooked on the 2D Mario, man. I need my fix, man.
What the hell just happened? Suddenly, Lou, suddenly your room tone got loud. Your voice was booming, and you're like, oh, yeah. You're like the Kool-Aid man just burst into the podcast.
It was pretty good, though.
Yeah. It was a random Skype glitch or whatever. It was great.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. That wasn't me.
Sometimes I feel like there's some like software setting that just tries to compensate for low volume and just has no threshold on it. And just like, anyway. Okay, let me try to salvage that. Or do you need to make a time code editor?
No, we'll keep this all in.
Awesome.
It's all right. Perfect.
Yeah, keep it all, baby.
Do it live.
Oh, yeah.
anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff man thrusting in the direction of the problem.
The wheels are all the way off. Anyway, so for people who can't get enough of 2D Mario, but in the sense that they just want, like, you know, you can sometimes with 2D Mario games, actually, as I'm doing literally at this moment, you can play 2D Mario games kind of mindlessly while you're doing other things like podcasting.
I'm glad you have that in the right order.
So what you can do, so for those folks, you know, they can always just sign on and see, oh, what new levels are there today? What light has given for me to play today that I can check out, get my little 2D Mario fix, because hopefully it's fair for the next 2D Mario. I know they can't really wait too long before going back to that well, but hopefully they'll take a little bit of a break. And this can be something to tide people over for really, I mean, who knows? The sky's the limit, right, on how many good levels could come out of a tool like this.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And it is a really intuitive tool from what I've seen. I'm really impressed with how nicely they've kind of modeled it all. You have kind of a grid-based system, but it doesn't look like graph paper. It almost looks kind of like a patchwork. It's a bit softer. Things kind of click into place. When you move things on the gamepad, it actually has a little hand that like moves them on the screen, which looks kind of weird. But it does feel kind of like Mario Paint. They have a few Mario Paint-esque things in there. It seems like a weird evolution of that. And from what I was reading, this is actually how the game was created. Nintendo was trying to create a Mario Paint for the Wii U, and they realized, well, I mean, that's not really maybe that interesting of an idea anymore. I guess between like Art Academy games and the fact that, you know, people have been drawing things on, you know, Wacom tablets and everything for years now. It's not really a novel idea. So then they realized, well, what if we let people make their own Mario levels? And that's kind of how this changed. So I feel like that maybe they had kind of a nice interface built from the Mario Paint idea and then converted into creating levels and, you know, they're taking all the hard work out of it, so it's pretty nice.
Yep. Plus, for people who would be game designers who basically would just be inspired to make a Mario clone, but would kind of, you know, be doing people the disservice of having to just change the skin for copyright issues, you know, now they can exercise that creativity in a much more reasonable way.
Yeah, and using the actual assets that you've grown to love. So
yeah.
I think that's what's going to really make or break this game is how much they can put in there.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you don't want to overload people, but I don't expect them to be planning a sequel to this anytime soon, so they better put a lot of stuff in there.
Right.
And, I mean, enemies and background objects even. That'd be cool if you could design your own backgrounds, you know? Smiley Mountain here or there.
This could be one where I could see some DLC in terms of, like, editor assets. Pack number one. Yeah, and they'll add in, you know, Karibo's shoe and, or, you know, they'll be like the desert pack, and they just, all the desert stuff will
That's
be in there.
That's a cool concept. Yeah, of the themed worlds.
Oh, yeah.
We've only Cobrats. Seen kind of the, you know, the standard
the
Mario
normal.
Levels. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Mushroom Kingdom, but we haven't seen the desert. Oh, what about the DLC pack that adds the, like the pop bot ups, you know, into the and then the dancing turtles and the Koopas.
All right, I got to leave this podcast. See you guys.
Sorry, I just had to bring a bad idea into this.
Yeah, as long as I don't have to buy it, that'd be fine.
It's a forced DLC. we've taken
Nintendo. Proud to announce every level will have added ba-ba-ba.
It's going to be directly to you DLC.
I would like a Subcon DLC. That'd be cool. Yeah. With all Super Mario Brothers 2 stuff.
Well, that's what I'm hoping they do is you know, have these different theme pack or, you know, themed skins, but then include enemies specific to that.
I mean, well, see, now you've got me wanting, like Super Mario Land, like the original, like all just disgusting monochrome green and black kind of thing.
Could you see them doing something like that on the handheld, on the 3DS for handheld Marios?
Maybe.
I don't think it would work nearly as well, though, because with the different aspect ratios and the different evolutions that those games went through, they wouldn't so easily be able to be transposed onto each other and swappable. I mean, think about how big Mario is in his world, in Mario Land, which, you know, he's tiny in that game, versus Super Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins, where he's kind of huge in comparison. And, you know, I don't think you'd be able to do that exactly. But it would be cool to at least have one skin that maybe looked like that, you know, one of the games, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Have they said whether this is a downloadable or a retail title?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Seems highly downloadable to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. This is another game where price point will really matter to me, because I don't think this is something I'd pay $50 or $60 for.
Yeah, I'm not even sure I'd pay $30.
Yeah, I know.
Like, that seems kind of high for, like, $20 would be a solid deal.
Right, $20, and then if they had DLC, it wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah, that adds up to maybe $30, $40 at the most, depending on what you wanted. Per downloadable pack I'm talking about. So $30 pack here, $40 pack here, right? You get three sprites and a bop-a-bop?
No.
No? Okay. Nope. So, I mean, I guess we can move on from this. Otherwise, we're just going to keep idealizing things that weren't even mentioned at the show. Which is fun, and I guarantee this segment's going to come back. If not, when Mario Maker comes out, you know, then when it's getting near anyway. Right. So, let's jump to the last of our quote-unquote main topics that we wanted to discuss. We didn't discuss this in the last episode, so I'm excited to introduce Xenoblade Chronicles X. The subtitle for that game is the least creative name for a video game ever, I think.
That is true. You know, someone was telling me they think that the actual spoken title of this is Xenoblade Chronicles Cross.
I've heard that too, yeah.
They think that this is yet another one of those crazy, wacky Japanese video games where they're having the X mean cross. So you've heard this as well, Hendrik?
Yeah, I mean, I just heard people referring it to it as that, so in podcasts and such.
I don't know if that's better or worse than X in this situation, but whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. No idea.
Anyway.
Anyway, the game, I think, what they showed was, I gotta say, I'm one of the biggest Xenoblade fans you're gonna meet. It's one of my, probably my favorite Wii game, probably one of my top 5 or top 10 games ever. And this one, I gotta say, it didn't show a lot of gameplay, it was mostly cinematic stuff, and it was a little too sci-fi anime-y for me. I mean, the first game was anime-ish, but it wasn't as sci-fi, and it didn't seem to have that kind of crazy, convoluted sci-fi-ness that goes on as much in anime. So I hope that they still kind of ground it in fantasy roots, that Xenoblade kind of, you know, there were these sort of grounded in a fantasy world, like, so I hope they don't stray too far from that. But else than that, you know, my expectations are sky high. Monolith Soft has really earned my respect, so I'm really excited for it.
You know, you're bringing some good points, though, because not that I'm hating on the game by any means. I'm very excited for it. Xenoblade is definitely, despite my lack of completion, is still one of my favorite games I've probably ever played. And I was really impressed with that, and I was impressed with the game. And when they showed that first trailer, oh boy. I mean, I was like, I don't even know how to describe the ecstatic behavior I was going through. However, since then, my excitement has diminished with every showing, because the second trailer, or the second focus, was about the mechs. And there wasn't too much to show about them. I mean, it was all right, but they just kind of showed a lot of flying around in mechs, okay. Then they had like a musicless clip of them fighting like a giant monkey in the mech suit. And okay, that's fine too. Now here they focus on the story, which is good and all, but I guess I just expect the story to be pretty good and be interesting. I'm not looking forward to the game for the story. I'm looking forward to the game for the exploration and the gameplay, and they've not really shown much of that since that beginning trailer. And I guess I want to see how this is like Xenoblade some more. I want to see how it's different. The story I expect to be different, and so I'm not totally persuaded by it yet.
I'm in the same boat as you, in that the first the thing that really got me excited about it was the first trailer. In fact, I didn't play Xenoblade until I saw the trailer for X.
Oh, no shit.
And interested, and I went and played Xenoblade. I was like, oh my god, this is unbelievable.
And the music was so great in that trailer, too. Holy moly.
Right, and I think I've heard they changed composers that from the Xenoblade, which has, like, without a doubt, one of the best ever soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little worrisome to me. But, you know, as long as they stay to the basics of Xenoblade, what I really want is to be exploring, you know, these big areas, and going through, and you know, that epic journey. And as long as they keep that, I don't really care that much if the story becomes more crazy and convoluted, as long as they, gameplay-wise, it has the same thing.
Right, as long as it's fun to get to point A and point B.
I think gameplay-wise, I think you're safe. From what I've seen, I think it looks like refinement of the previous game's mechanics, as opposed to any kind of even evolution. I mean, I don't want to try to make that sound like in a bad way or anything, but it looks, I think you're safe, is what I'm trying to say there.
And I do think the mechs will be a nice addition, if only to make traveling a little more fast after you've already explored an area. So.
Right. And they could do cool things with that, too. I mean, I'm not really concerned about the gameplay being bad or anything. I guess I'm just not feeling very hyped about the game right now because they're not showing me enough of the gameplay. What is what I want most? And do we have a release date? Or not a date, but do we have a time frame?
I think they said 2015, same as everything else in the world, it seems.
Yep.
But wasn't it originally planned for 14? That's what they were teasing? And now,
I believe so.
So it's been pushed.
Yep.
Pushed off the edge of a Bionis.
No.
And yeah, I do have a note here that it was moved to 2015. Why have I not hated on this more? Oh, that's because I've hated on the fact that Ricky, or at least a Ricky-type character, was shown at the end there.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm okay with him. I don't care to use him in Xenoblade, but I think they were showing us that to show that this is really that same world, and you're going to see some similar races and everything.
Right. I think it's the same. It's the same in the sense that, yeah, you will see the same kind of races and a lot of probably the same maybe big... how can I put it? Like, rules of this world apply, but but I do believe that they said it's not, you know, it's not connected story wise at all. It is a completely new
universe. Even with the Shulk looking character from the very beginning.
I believe so.
You know,
I believe so.
I hope that. Well, I mean, I don't know. I like the whole Bionis and Mechanis concept. These two giant entities that actually have whole worlds on them.
Yeah,
That was fantastic. And then, you know, they're just in this suspended water that just goes on for infinity almost. I mean, I don't know if anyone ever tried to, like, fly off the Bionis and just go in a direction and see what happens. I kind of hope that they play around with the universe more and maybe explain more of that, because I'm fascinated by the universe in which those characters lived in.
You haven't beaten the game yet, Xenoblade, right?
No.
I won't say anything.
No, but that's okay. I mean, don't say specifics, but so am I actually going to get some insight into this?
Well, You'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's anything you could say, really.
Right. Jeez, is this, how bizarre is this ending? I have to do this. Why?
You need to beat the game.
Here's what happens. I have limited plugs near my TV and everything, and so my Wii U's plugged in, but my Wii's not. I got to plug that thing back in so I actually play Xenoblade, because that's where my save file's at. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that soon. I just got to grind, but we won't get into that.
We'll wait.
Have you guys checked out the treehouse? Because I was just Googling, and it says that there's a lot of gameplay footage in the treehouse, and I haven't looked at it yet.
I saw that it was up, but I didn't watch any of it.
I saw it. It was nothing we haven't seen. It was running around fields, fighting monsters that they came in contact with. I mean, that was basically.
Was there any sort of chat log like we kind of saw in Japanese in one of the trailers to imply? Some sort of, I mean, probably not because it probably wasn't online at the time.
Oh, no. I mean, they were just doing totally single player.
But they didn't talk about that at all or anything?
Nope. Not that I remember.
Because that's another thing that might get me hyped up is to see how they want to do interactivity with this game, and we haven't really seen that either. But I guess if the game's probably not January 2015, so they still have time to show off. I wouldn't doubt if we get a whole Nintendo Direct based around this game.
That would probably be good.
Yeah. I feel like at the rate that they're showing us stuff, they're going to kind of need one. Like 2 months before it comes out or something. And they'll probably announce the release date of the game at that point, too.
Right.
So, I'm trying to see.
I just feel like the first game, you know, the first game blew me away so much that it's like they have at least a one game pass, in my opinion. Like, this is one of those games where I'm not trying to find out too much information because I just know I'm going to get it and I'm fine being surprised, you know?
You mean you're going to get it if GameStop sells it?
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't it be just how frigging, like, tragic would it be if there's some kind of release controversy or something?
You have to get it as a subscription bonus for Nintendo Force.
It would probably be Game Informer or something.
It'd be Edge Magazine. Have you seen the recent magazine? I don't know. It was something on Twitter. They were slamming Nintendo about what Nintendo's going to do now that the real world has hit them or something. I don't know. It was so crazy.
I don't even know what that means.
It's not worth talking about. So, anything else about the Xenoblade trailer that intrigued us?
No. I'm in the same boat as Joe. You know, I love the first game so much that I'll get this one no matter what, and if it's not too good, I'll give it a pass.
I think Nintendo fans are willing to do that. Not in the sense of, like, you guys are fanboys and you're sick, and you make me sick.
That's what my sense.
Ricky Tiki, not sick.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, you're very deranged.
Ricky's going right to the backup team.
Somebody write a review about this game that's negative and say, Ricky Stinky, or something like that. just write a review for Xenoblade as Ricky. Would be awesome.
Can I do a quick aside? I just recently on my 3DS finished the Xenoblade puzzle after, a year or something, and it was the most disappointing thing of all time. It's just those stupid Ricky dudes, like, dancing around for no reason.
Puzzles in general have not been that impressive lately. Like, I just finished the Chibi Robo one, and I'm like, oh, okay. He's vacuuming up salt or whatever.
Do we know if, like, in Japan, is the Ricky character, like, you know,
I think it's
wholly
president.
Embraced? Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't that be exactly the kind of character that you could see over there having, like, entire cafes made in his honor or something?
It was like a CGI Ricky in, like, commercials for men's cologne with, like, women, right. Japanese women all around him, and he's also eating, like,
Ricky
McDonald's.
Good.
He's eating, like, a McDonald's apple pie.
Yeah, at least I play with the Japanese voices, and I think that makes him much more tolerable, at least.
Yeah.
I did that too, but I don't remember what... He was probably already benched by the time I switched the voices over.
See, I can only imagine what rhyme time is like in Japanese, though.
Less annoying.
Less annoying, definitely.
No such thing.
Hey, your life would be of a less quality if you did not know when it was rhyme time and when it wasn't, okay?
It's true. And it's if important. My rotator cuff was stiff.
That's how I start every podcast. You can't see it, but
awesome.
I just say it's Fink time, and then I hit the on button to Skype, and we just go for it.
Awesome.
Well, okay. The last things I want to say about Xenoblade Chronicles Cross is, which I guess sounds better than X, but
who knows?
Is I took a few quick notes of just some keywords I saw in the story-based trailer, because that's all we really got was a story-based trailer. People shouting at each other from weird angles, and they were saying destiny of growth, humanity being wiped out, no sign of the world. Yeah, so clearly someone is maniacal and an asshole, and he wants to destroy humanity. So, I mean, I guess that's... It's probably going to be more interesting than that, because even though I haven't finished it, Xenoblade's story has been very funky in a good way.
Yeah, yeah.
And, there's been a lot of, you know, good pivotal turns I didn't see coming and that kind of stuff. So I have hopes. I have hopes. But I also hope to talk about some other games in this podcast. So
let's
seg it. Not seg it, but seg it.
Bob Saget time?
Yeah. Let's America's Funniest Home Videos this bitch and move on to Yoshi's Woolly World. Which I talked, I think, at length about this the other night. So let's jump right to our guests, Hendrik, Lou. Do either of you have anything particularly you want to say?
The main thing is that there's no Baby Mario in it, so that means it could be the best Yoshi game ever.
DLC
selling point. Oh no!
they'll put in a Baby Mario that goes ba ba da instead of crying.
I don't know what's worse.
No, I am actually very excited reason. What was that? That was like the Elmo song or something.
What was the baby doing the waz?
Oh, okay, gotcha. That was good. I'm excited for this for the same reason, the lack of Baby Mario and the death. Death is possible in the original game, but like it's not. Well, I'm just saying the Kirby distinction. You know,
I want Yoshi's Woolly World. I'm really excited for the death.
I'm excited for death, cruel and brave.
Put that quote on the box, man.
Now with death.
You know, my survey on Club Nintendo is going to be hilarious. Name one or two things you were looking forward to experiencing. The death.
Awesome.
And unraveling Yarn Yoshi one thread at a time.
Oh, man.
So, okay, tell me more, guys. Tell me more.
No Baby Mario. Yoshi is one of my least favorite entities developed by Nintendo in terms of a game.
Wow.
I'm glad you're on the show today.
I don't think I put a star next to this on the notes.
No, you didn't. Well, it's just funny because with Amiibo, you're like, hate it, and then you left. And now you're like, actually, it's one of the worst things in existence.
So. Yeah,
and it's the worst. It's just not my favorite. It's not my bag, man.
No, fair enough. It's all right.
It all started with stupid Super Mario Brothers World 2 with the stupid baby and the crying. And I was like, what is this crap? I'm a teenager. I don't need a baby yet. I don't need no baby mama drama.
Like, tell me what you guys think about the co-op. That's a new thing. There's never been a co-op Yoshi.
Well, it definitely makes it more likely that I'll play it. My wife saw it and was very excited about it, and then it was just a happy accident that co-op is included so that we can play it together.
Mm-hmm.
Not the kind of game I would run out to play. I mean, I just only this year finally played the original Yoshi's Island. And while I enjoyed it, I didn't think it was all... It didn't quite live up to the hype for me. So, you know, this one I would wait probably to get on sale, but now that my wife is interested in it, I'll definitely give it a go.
I've liked Yoshi games in the past. I do find Baby Yoshi to be annoying, so I'm happy that that's gone. But I've never been too interested in trying to 100% these levels. Collecting every star and every red coin and every flower and all that. But for some reason, maybe it's the scope of the game or maybe it's the yarn aesthetic, but I'm really excited to jump in, or maybe just because Baby Mario's not there, I'm just excited to jump in and explore a Yoshi world that looks like this and plays like this. And I think they're doing some cool things with the mechanics, although they're probably more or less HD-ifying a lot of the mechanics and just kind of putting them on a console game again. But I'm really looking forward to it. And I think my girlfriend's going to love playing it with me, and I feel like my nephews might enjoy it a lot too, because they're pretty big into platformers. They play a lot of Donkey Kong, and this I'm sure will be easier than Donkey Kong in some respects, but it's not going to be, again, Kirby's epic yawn.
Whoa.
I just made that up just now, but I'm sure everyone said it. I've never played it, so people know this. I actually keep wanting to impulse buy Kirby's Epic Yarn because it looks so fun. But
it is good.
I don't know. I need it to be at a really low price to bite.
I played it with my niece, and it was fun, but it's not a game I think I would have loved too much on my own.
Maybe if I buy it with the mentality of letting my, not my oldest nephew, but my younger nephews, who maybe aren't as good at video games yet, play, you know, do something that like that with them, then maybe it's more worth it. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be a good gift for one of them, I think.
Yeah. I could consider that. And then, of course, by that point, I'll actually wish I had it, because I'll see them playing it, it'll look fun, and then I'll want it.
You'll find some cheap thing and be like, oh, this was your real gift. Sorry, that was a mix-up.
You know, that kind of happened with one of the games that I get him. I don't know, I won't spend time thinking about it on the podcast, but I think it was a Sonic game, believe it or not, that actually looked kind of fun, and he had it. It wasn't Sonic Colors, Joe, but with some other Sonic game.
You know I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm. You are, even though you forgot that that you were a fan.
What?
When we discussed the Euphonics recently.
Oh, yeah. Yep. True.
So, okay. Yoshi's Woolly World, I guess that's all everyone wants to say about it, so we can move on to Bayonetta 2.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, Lou, you have something to say.
I was not interested at all in the game when it was first announced to be coming to Wii U, but then, the trailer they showed at the E3 was pretty fun with all the different Nintendo skins that she could be dressed up in, plus the addition of Bayonetta 1 being included.
Yep.
That may have just sold the game for me.
Yep.
Because I don't like playing things out of order, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like jumping in right into a second of something when I know there's a first round. So yeah, I'm actually pretty interested now in it.
Yeah, and you know, they went the extra mile. Instead of just releasing it as a separate thing on Wii U and hoping people buy it, they force you to just have it. And then now you have no excuse. And I made this crack on the last podcast, and Joe kind of scoffed at me, but maybe it could open them up to having a third. If you know, I don't know if the sales would be there, and that's what Joe was kind of making fun of me for. But at least you know you'd have the whole series on the system. So you have an established core audience for yourself, however small it may be. You know, you're not really taking the segmented fans from, you know, who played it on, what was it, on the PlayStation before?
It was on both.
So. Xbox. Okay.
Was it just on Xbox or both?
No, both, but okay. The 360 version I've heard is the better version.
You know, instead of having fans who maybe played it on that and then maybe they'll get it on the Wii U, the second one, but they kind of want the third one to go back to Xbox. Like, you know, you'll have fans who just started on the Wii U and want it on the Wii U and that kind of thing. So maybe.
I don't know. No, I mean, that's, hey,
I hope for that. Yeah. Or I just hope that maybe it'll inspire other games to have sequels and have their first games also on Wii U in the same fashion. Because, you know, they're not just putting the game out there and then saying dual analog yourself. They're updating the controls a little bit. Like Lou said, they have different costumes to kind of jazz up with Zatarain's. And, you know, they're doing little things to make it a little bit more of an experience for people who haven't played it before. And I give them props for that.
Yeah, they're putting in effort. I was not interested. I'm still not too interested, but the Bayonetta 1 definitely put it on my radar, at least.
Yeah, it's kind of like you were saying about the other game earlier, about how you're excited for fans of the series, but you're not necessarily excited yourself. That's how I feel about Bayonetta 2 right now. I'm not really interested in picking it up. I never had any interest in the first one, even though I had a means to play it. But I'm really excited for people who are fans, and the game looks good. I can guarantee it's a good game for what it is, but I'm just not interested in that gameplay right now. Even though I'm kind of leaning towards Hyrule Warriors a bit, which looks kind of similar. I guess we could segue to Hyrule Warriors really quickly if you'd like, since Lou kind of reacted to that, and we weren't going to necessarily talk about it on the show, but we can. That game is having the opposite Xenoblade effect for me, where at first I could give two shits, and now I can give way more shits, because...
I have more shits to give.
Yes, I have an orphanage of shits to give.
Oh, no. No, that's not right.
It sounds about right.
But it's the opposite effect, because Xenoblade, I started, you know, off hot, and now I'm cold, and with Hyrule Warriors, I was just, you know, disinterested, and now I'm like, this is probably a really cool game. And the fact that they're mixing in so many different assets, ideas from different games in the franchise, I have no idea if this is going to have a story relevance here or not, but I was watching some videos on YouTube today at lunch, and they were showing how there's the Stalfos from Ocarina of Time mixed in with those little goblin creatures from Skyward Sword, and they're all fighting. Yep. You know, if but they're, even though the timeline is vague in the Zelda land, it still does exist to some degree, and these beings really shouldn't be meshing together. And then the fact that they have all these characters like Impa and Midna all around in the same world, you know, is there some sort of storyline where they're mixing all the timelines together? And it, maybe it's called Hyrule Historia. And
Hyrule Historia, the game.
Yeah, it's just a really long Hyrule Warriors, Hyrule Historia. What if we all accidentally bought a strategy guide without realizing it? You know, that's all that book really is. But it just looks really cool. It looks like a big, weird fan service game with just different gameplay. But the gameplay isn't necessarily different. It's like if they took the special fighting mechanics from Twilight Princess, the special moves, and maybe even Wind Waker, and then just elaborated on them. And then gave us the quote-unquote hardcore, mature graphical style that we're not getting with the new Zelda anyway. So it's kind of like a big fan service. It seems pretty cool. I'm pretty much in at this point.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You know, it's all fan service, and I'm okay with that. I mean, Dynasty Warrior games are the ones I've played aren't too deep. It's just fun to go around and smash all bunches of different enemies. And especially with the Zelda universe, I think you can have a more diverse set of enemies. And therefore, that makes the game more fun because you don't have to go up against clones of 1,000 warriors with spikes or swords, you know? It could be, you know, differentiated. There could be some Octorok, some Moblins, some Goblins, some Staphlos, some Stalfos, some
Bokoblins.
Fastlosts, you know? Mix it up. Have a little fun, you know? Jazz it up a little. Do a little number, you know, jazz hands. You got yourself a game.
See, but, you know, you say that these enemies in Dynasty Warriors are boring and bland, but there are some feudal Japanese warriors who are upset with you right now because they connect with the enemies in Dynasty Warriors.
Oh, please. They serve the daimyo, man, and the shogun.
No, but there is so much to feed from in the Zelda universe, and this is the first game that really can do it freely. You know, what other Zelda game has been able to do that?
Yeah, free reign to do what you want, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. And these moves are really stylistic and really, they look like they're fun. I don't know if they've mentioned if there's any motion control, but I would love this game to have Skyward Sword style controls where you could use, you know, motion controls if you wanted to as an option.
Yeah, I'm going to say that if it's an option, I will choose to ignore it, but hey.
options are always good.
At least you didn't say that about the podcast. So
I would be happy for those people that want the motion controls. They get it.
The fear would be that your wrist would literally fall off, right? Because you attack so much in these games.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It is all offense-based.
Is it? Okay. Well, then fine.
But options are always good.
Maybe they'll release a controller that's just one giant button. It's the hit button, and you just mash the big red button.
That's the complaint against Dynasty Warrior games, that they really need one button, and you just keep mashing it.
Well, so do we know yet if this is going to deepen that a bit? I mean, if you
sure hope so.
If you
it
have
looks
a game series,
deeper to me.
Yeah, if you have a game series that people complain about key gameplay mechanic, I would hope if you're going to do a game like this with such a hinge on a beloved franchise that you would make sure to listen to some of your criticism.
Mm-hmm. You know.
But that's Al Borland for you, everybody. Or actually, that was more a Tim the Toolman Taylor. No, that was his maybe his neighbor.
I don't know.
I feel like they all did them. Mm-hmm.
We're wandering down a path that
I don't think so, Tim.
Yeah, there you go. You got that.
Okay. Well,
Bad Shadow Link isn't here to hear that.
Yeah. I'll record a separate part for him to react. And he'll just be cursing at us all like we're playing Mario Kart online with him. We love you, Tim. Okay, so let's move on then. We still have a lot to discuss, and time is running out.
Let's do it.
We have Star Fox. That nice reveal, which was a non-reveal.
Yeah.
I mean, I have said my piece on it on the last episode, and just to sum that up, they probably shot their wad a little early on this. I mean, I don't think that we needed to see it. I think it kind of did them a disservice, perhaps. And probably didn't. I'm probably full of crap on that, but I feel like it would have been more impactful to see it in more of a glorious way, as opposed to just like a blurry screen at the end of the digital presentation and then some vague discussion about it, or like a little tiny tech demo. You know, I wanted to see all of my, you know, animal friends come back and blowing shit up and having fun, and you know, people trying it on the show floor, which will probably be next year, but I don't think we needed to see it.
Yeah, it was hardly a, I wouldn't even call it an unfinished product. It was like, here's some
started screens. Product.
Yeah. Barely started. We turned the computer on and put some things in animation.
We have a Google Doc named Star Fox going.
You know, maybe that screen that Miyamoto was playing on that was blurred out at the end of the presentation was just like the actual original Star Fox, and he's right. Just like, oh, you caught me playing Star Fox.
Yeah.
Are we sure that we didn't see a Super Nintendo controller in his hand? Yeah. Because when it's blurry, you don't know what the hell. It could look like it's HD. We don't know.
Good luck.
Nice.
So it felt... Oh, boy.
Can you make it?
Can you make a frappuccino with extra fat? Take that as a no.
Extra bacon.
I feel like I can't weigh in much on this one because I've played Star Fox 64 up until like maybe the second to last level, and I never. And then when I lost, you went all the way back to the beginning. And I was like, yeah, that's enough of that. And then my favorite Star Fox is Star Fox Adventures for GameCube. So. I feel like people might just hate me already.
You're
for that,
a fascinating individual.
I didn't know anyone liked that game, let alone could hold it up as their favorite in a franchise. But
well, like I said,
but I have not played the game, so I'm not commenting on the quality.
It gets a bad rap. It really gets a bad rap, in my opinion.
I had moderate fun with it. I will admit.
As far as Zelda goes,
tell you about it.
What's that, Lou?
I was going to say, I think Mr. Mustache, a.k.a. Rob, could tell you more about it, because I believe he finished it for Backlogus last year, and he said it was a kind of a slog at the end. He's like, can't believe they released that kind of game. I know I'm putting words into his mouth for him, but he might agree with that statement.
Yeah, well, I mean, it probably would be more interesting listening to him talk about it than actually playing the game.
Mm.
Hey, you know? I just told you it's good. Come on.
I don't believe you.
You know what? I want you and Mr. Mustache to have a debate about this on episode 70.
Now, what else came out on the game? There was Star Fox Adventures and then Star Fox Assault?
Yeah, and I never played that.
Oh,
so I
yeah.
can't.
I played Assault, and that was okay, but it still had some annoying side characters.
Huh. Actually, I was really excited for that game. Yeah, was that...
I mean,
I like side characters, though.
There were points in that game where you still had to get out of the ship or whatever you were driving around and walk around and do stuff. And I'm like, that's not Star Fox.
That's fine.
Well, isn't annoying side characters like part of the experience of Star Fox?
I guess.
It's all about Slippy.
Yeah, you got Slippy. Yeah,
I love Slippy Toad.
I like
Slippy. He's in every one, I think.
He is a terrible pilot, but he's on the team.
But I do think I am glad that they're trying new things with the gamepad and that they're kind of using this as a way to show off what they can do with it. You know, I know some people are a little worried about that because it might not be the Starflex gameplay they know and love, but since I don't particularly know or love Starflex gameplay, I'm happy to see it.
Well, some were concerned that it might be a remake, but in HD and with the gamepad controlling, you know. I would be disappointed about that.
Well, they just remade it for 3DS,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. You know what? It's isn't it still like $40 for the 3DS?
Yes.
Probably.
How can you not lower the price? How long has it been out for? Like 3 years? Come on, Nintendo.
I think I got it for free, is how I played it.
How did you
come
do that?
Come on, man.
Was there, I think they had a thing where you could, wait. No, I own the cartridge, so I don't know. It's Professor Layton I got for free. I must have got some sort of cheap deal. I didn't pay $40 for that game. I think I paid $20.
I've been on the lookout for it. I mean, now that I got it on Virtual Console, I'm not as interested, but like I was always on the lookout for cheap deals at Best Buy, and it never was available.
Yeah. Anyway, price point.
Anyway.
It's $33.96 still on Amazon. So it still hasn't dropped, and that's because it's from some random outlet. It's not even Amazon selling it.
That's one where they should do a permanent price drop on the eShop, I feel like. $20, you know, knock it down to 10 every now and again. I think they'd make a lot more money on it, but what do I know?
Yeah. I mean, come on. We're not smart, right?
Yeah, I think they should do more of that kind of thing anyway. Not just with the Star Fox game, but that's a whole topic for another day. Let's talk about a subject we didn't mention in the last show, and it was the fact that Metroid had a no-show at this E3, which, you know, according to the E3 Predictathon that many of us partook in, you know, we all thought it was going to show up there, and then there was nothing. I mean, there was some slight discussion out, you know, just on the show floor, that kind of thing, but they had nothing to show for themselves. And that really disappointed me. I don't know about you guys.
Disappointed me. It was one of my top hopes for this E3, but
I wasn't surprised that there was nothing on Wii U. I think that they're probably going to go back to Retro for that if they do it. And Retro, it hasn't been long enough since Donkey Kong, probably, for them to be deep enough into showing a new game. But I was hoping that on 3DS we might finally get a 2D Metroid. And, yeah, it was disappointing that that didn't come to fruition.
On the 3DS, I'd be happy with something along the lines of Metroid Other M. That would look pretty cool in 3D, but maybe with, like, you know, a different story. We got a big bagel in the terms of the Metroid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's I've got a bet with Deathly Hallows from the board that they will reveal a new Metroid by the end of 2015. And if I lose, I have to buy him a 3DS game of his choice. So I've got my fingers crossed.
So you're writing daily letters to Nintendo?
Yeah, all my Club Nintendo surveys are asking, where's Metroid?
Dear Nintendo, I'm waiting for some more Metroid to come through. Could you please help me out in this endeavor? Thanks.
You sound like a creepy computer from the Metroid universe.
No, it sounds like deep thoughts.
I can't let you do that, Star Fox.
Are we talking about Jack Handy again? Didn't we talk about that on the last?
I think we did.
Yep.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you know, it was quite a disappointment, but at least there was an interview where, I forget who said it, so obviously I'm good at my job here. There was an interview where it was a key, I think it might have been Miyamoto.
It was Miyamoto and someone else, I think.
And they said that, you know, they definitely acknowledge that there needs to be some Metroid action going on, and they acknowledge that both the Metroid Prime type game and also the 2D, you know, Metroid, you know, Zero or Fusion or those kind of games need to exist as well. So they really do see Metroid in two factions right now, and that both need to be served, which is very nice to see. And I really hope that Retro has moved on from Donkey Kong to a Metroid Prime, because I really think that that would be a showcase game that would really blow people's, you know, lids off, and putting the Wii U in their hands in that regard. Getting them.
You never know with Nintendo, because, like, I would not be surprised at all if they've been working on Metroid games nonstop. And just, you know, the ideas just didn't pan out. You know, they're always just trying to come up with new gameplay stuff. And like they said, Star Fox has surfaced several times and just never ends up being made. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were trying something with Metroid and just hasn't, so far, hasn't come into something that could really be shown.
Right. That's true. And so, you know, they could have some stuff established that once they, you know, get the story in place or the certain gameplay mechanic, then they can just run with it. You know, and
right.
And who knows, we'll see a halfway finished game in 6 months from now or something. I don't know.
Right.
We can only hope. But I really was glad that Miyamoto was thinking about that and not just playing Star Fox on the Super Nintendo. But, I mean, when do you guys think is the next time we'll see Metroid? Do you think that it'll be E3, or do you think they might get something going and then maybe show us in a Direct as kind of a mind blow?
I'm going to guess a Nintendo Direct before the new year, before an E3.
Before the new year?
Which would be before
E3. Yes, so before December, or before January.
Interesting.
So within the next,
I would say in January.
Months.
I say in January, because oftentimes they have, like, that one big one where they showed Wind Waker and all that stuff. I think that was January.
Yeah, almost like E3 in July, or Christmas in July, but like E3 and Christmas kind of thing.
Yes, that's a good point.
You know, so I
mean, we still have July.
We do. It has not left. What do you mean?
It hasn't even come yet. They could do a Christmas in July Nintendo Direct and showcase some more bonus games.
Last year, I do believe they had a nice showing after E3. Wasn't it like a week or two later and they showed some cool stuff off?
Right.
I don't recall.
That might have been related to the fact that, you know, the Nintendo Direct at E3 didn't go off as well. But who knows? I mean, I think you guys are both right. I think we might see, if we're going to see anything at all, it's going to happen in that time frame. I would see maybe January as being likely, just because they're going to want people to focus the hell on Smash Brothers come holiday, and they're not going to want to have them fixated even on a Metroid game or anything big, any big news until they've had a chance to get this out of their system and touch the game. But then again, they could almost use that as a hype machine to fuel it, because people love playing as Samus and Zero Suit Samus in the Smash Brothers series. So, you know, that could be some sort of subconscious correlation there.
I have season tickets on the hype train.
Yeah, I've got a my own room in one of the cabooses.
One of the cabooses?
Yep.
I think there's only one caboose.
Is the caboose the end of the train?
That's a train foul, man. Yeah, come on.
Train foul. Wow, I'm really upset I had a train foul, guys. My life is ruined because of the train foul. What would you call the middle part of the train, then?
The cars,
okay, yeah. Yeah, I knew that, okay.
Although, what special purpose does the caboose serve? Is there something...
I think in the olden days, that's where
Star Fox staff shown.
where the staff would be.
Really?
Like Steven here. He's got a room in it, so...
Yeah, so I'm just working hard on the hype train, that's all. Which is kind of true, because I love the fuck out of everything, it seems like. and so with me being in the caboose, you guys can just pull that pin out, and I can just, like, slowly get left behind, you know? You guys can just run away with the hype, and I'll be stuck on the tracks with an unfinished copy of Metroid.
Nice.
But let's get this train going to another company that was holding things back.
Ooh.
Horrible segue. I'm just out of my game today. But Ubisoft.
Don't get me started.
This really wasn't news in the sense of the presentation, but it was the first real thing we heard from E3 once E3 started, that from my understanding, Ubisoft has a completely finished Wii U game that they do not want to release or even fucking bring up until there's more Wii U owners. I don't get that.
Because what's not to get, Steven?
Because
it goes beyond me, man.
Because we don't even know what type of game it is, right? And so yes, there's tons of Wii U owners now because they're playing Mario Kart and they bought the system for Mario Kart. Well, if they bought it for Mario Kart, then they bought it for that kind of game. So what's it fucking matter if if you know if your game's out or not. I mean, they may not be interested in your game anyway. So how do you ever really know? I guess law of averages. They just hope they have a better shot at making money if there's more people. But and I mean, to an extent, that's true. But I mean, well, way to like sell yourself short.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever heard of this happening ever before? I mean, there's always going to be a time in the future where more people have a console. It's just that's a fact. Right. So, right. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I mean, as a Nintendo fan, I'm very used to getting lectured about how third parties know everything and how I can't wrap my simple brain around their business acumen. But right. This one is just like, I've yet to hear anyone explain this logically to me because it just doesn't make sense.
No, yeah. No, no, Nintendo. You're going to do as we say.
And, I mean, again, they're a company and they're allowed to do what they want with their product. You know, I don't fault them for that. I just, like you, I don't understand the logic behind this and I haven't been explained it correctly because Ubisoft hasn't explained it correctly.
Well, I mean, the normal unspoken agreement, right, is people make games so that people will buy hardware so that people will buy games, right? I mean, that's the idea. And
sounds when you logical launch, to me.
When you launch a new console, everyone goes into it with the understanding of, okay, we have to sell some games to not as many people in the hopes that one day there will be more people. And when it comes to the Wii U, like, I could see them saying, well, it's been out a while, and at this point we just – basically, they could be just saying, like, we just give up. We just don't think it's going to happen. However, it's just always odd that it seems like with Nintendo there's this, like, supreme wait-and-see approach where it's always, like – the console is always, like, guilty until proven innocent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yet with, like, these other systems that are actually more expensive to develop for – third parties are more than happy to say, like, yes, we're investing in this audience. We think this audience is going to reward us, and so we will put our products there to cultivate that audience. And it's just this weird...
Well, and then they do stuff like this. Why did Ubisoft even make a damn game for the Wii U, then? If they're not confident enough with the system to even talk about the game, besides just teasing it in the sense of like, hey, we have something in our vault, you know, it doesn't give me confidence in Ubisoft to create a good fucking game.
Well, doesn't that sound like just some kind of weird cop out / bluff that doesn't make any sense, right?
Yes.
Like, was it Henrik who just said, like, have you never ever heard of this happening before, where someone was like, yeah, we got a game. Oh, we're not going to release it,
yeah,
but it is good and it is awesome.
You would love it.
Drop a little history knowledge on you, but the United States did that during World War II with the atomic bomb. We threatened Tokyo with a third atomic bomb, of which we didn't have, mind you.
History major.
Yeah, there you go. Eh?
No,
so
that is
it worked in world wars, but in terms of console wars, I don't think it really works. I think it has the opposite effect.
So you're saying this is a megaton game confirmed?
Very nice, sir. Job.
Very nice.
No, what's weird is really what would Ubisoft stand to gain with by putting this nugget of information out there? I don't. It's a
just to piss people off. At this point, that's their only goal.
Yeah,
I guess that's true. We're talking about these assholes, right?
And I'm so mad because, you know, Zombie U was a really awesome game that used the gamepad perfectly for that type of game.
And
I
Rayman
think
Wish?
I went on the board
at launch, by the way.
I went on the board and said it's probably one of my favorite zombie games of all time just because of their utilization of the gamepad and the atmosphere that they chose to use for the game.
Yeah.
Right, and Rayman Legends, if it had come out on time, would have been up there, I'm sure.
I mean,
it was still good, but...
I guarantee that they squandered sales by holding it back because people were pissed about it.
Yeah. There were a lot of people, whether you agree with it or not, that were like... You know, that were really excited about the game, but just out of principle decided not to buy the Wii U version because they felt, you know.
Well, I'll be honest myself, I've never really been into that series, but I was truly interested in that game. It looked like it was really fun. The gamepad use was going to be really novel. And then when they delayed it, I was like, okay. And I just forgot about it. I lost any interest whatsoever.
Yeah.
So they lost, you know, what was it, 50, 60 bucks? How much was it?
Yep.
well, I mean, that's just one guy, but I mean, I'm not alone, you know.
we've finished a game, but we needed $60 more to release it. So we won't.
So anyway, let's get off this depressing shit, and we'll take one more. We'll take one more break. You know, we'll take some happy pills, and we'll come back, and we'll discuss in kind of a rapid fire succession because we're short on time here. But of some of the lesser known, you know, unveilings at E3, and I think it'll be interesting. Let's none of it was on the last episode, so it's all fresh. We're back, and we're in the caboose of this podcast. Well, I don't know what that was. We have a couple games I wanted to bring up here. A couple of them Joe particularly wanted to discuss, and so I'm going to give the floor to him. First up, we're going to start with Final Fantasy Explorers, one of the few 3DS titles to actually show up at E3 from Nintendo this year. So Joe, tell us about it, because I have not had a chance to look into this very much.
All right, I hope we have a lot of time left in this podcast because there's actually almost no information on this game. But what we do know is that it looks to be in the vein of Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, and I believe they've announced that there will be online multiplayer. So I'm just hoping that if this comes to the West, that this would be the kind of game where you could get that fix where you hop online with your buddies and fight baddies and explore and try to get some loot. Yeah, they had, I always get which game was which, but they had Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, Echoes of Time, and then also Ring of Fate, I believe was the other one. And with at least one of them, with the latter one, you know, you could play online. That's something that me and some other people, especially Mop It Up, used to do. So I've been hoping that another game would come and offer that experience. I've kind of filled that void with Monster Hunter. That's kind of been what I've used to get that experience. Yeah. By the way, we got to talk. But anyway, yeah, we'll do that another time. So that game, and then another game that is could easily achieve the same effect is Fantasy Life. So it will kind of be a race to see which game, either if Final Fantasy Explorers gets enough information out there to convince me to wait for that to come out, or if Fantasy Life comes out first, I'll probably just jump on board with that. But yeah, I'm very excited to see that Fantasy Life is coming, because that actually, you know, it kind of reminds me of Dragon Quest IX for a lot of the same reasons I just described about the Crystal Chronicles games. But it just looks like it kind of has that sort of setting and that ability to just kind of wander around and just do stuff for the sake of wandering around doing stuff, as opposed to, as much as I love Monster Hunter, it's like there's no like downtime, there's no like catching your breath, it's just huge battle after another. But something like Fantasy Life, it looks like you can like sew a nice sweater for yourself or some other mundane task that this game actually makes fun, you know. So
all right. I mean, the 3DS needed some showing, you know, at the C3, and this was kind of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this and Codename Steam is about it, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, is there anything you want to bring up about that? I wasn't going to have that on our list here, but I don't know anything about it.
I mean, it looks cool. I'm glad that it was something new. You know, everybody wants new IPs, and then sometimes people, they say that, and then they are mad when there's not another Zelda or Metroid. No, but
I don't think anyone means it when they say it.
Yeah. But I don't say it that much, but I am always happy to see something new. And this seems like, you know, they could have easily done another Advance Wars or another Fire Emblem, and this is kind of taking that vein and kind of putting a new twist on it. And I like that it's more action-focused. I get kind of bored of the strategy stuff too much, you know, when there's not a little bit of actual old-school arcadiness to it. So I'm interested. I'll see how it pans out.
All right, well, fair enough. Let me bring up a game that was kind of a surprise to me, honestly, and it was a pleasant surprise. Mario vs. Donkey Kong for the Wii U. This was kind of a unexpected treat, I think. I mean, are you guys fans of this series?
I definitely am. I'm a little bit disappointed that they've gone off into this mini-March stuff completely, because the original gameplay, which is really from Donkey Kong 94, is my favorite. But I still like the mini stuff, and I did 100% the eShop game that came out. And actually, I think it was DSiWare a while back. So I'm gonna get this. I'm gonna play it. And they are including a make your own level mode. And mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty cool. They have the. Did you see about the tipping system that they have?
No.
So I guess the way it works is that if you try someone's level, you give it you can tip them up to 5 stars, and they use those stars to buy stamps for Miiverse. And so I think that's a kind of cool way of rating, and also kind of rewarding the people who make cool levels.
You know, I think I did catch a little bit of that, but I wasn't explained what that all entails. That is kind of cool.
I hope they can. That would be a good system to use for Mario Maker too, if it works, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the only downside is if you're not particularly creative, you know, and you don't make outstanding levels, you may not ever get those stamps that you'd like to see.
So, well, they might have another way. They might have another way to get them too. So who knows?
Yeah, I mean, but then again, if you have certain stamps that are there, you know, maybe one or two to show your achievement of being a great level maker. I mean, I can see that, but yeah. As long as they don't lock too much, because the stamps are something for Miiverse that I actually find to be pretty nice. I like adding those to my Miiverse posts.
Right.
And but I mean, I was really psyched to see this game because I do like Donkey Kong 94 quite a bit, and I did like the original Mario vs. Donkey Kong in that regard. I do like the Minis March as well. I find it quite to be a great puzzler, and it's got a cool art style and everything. I wasn't really psyched about the last one that we had in the 3DS, or maybe it was a DS. No, I think it was a new one in the 3DS.
No, it was 3DS.
Yeah, and it, the gameplay was shaken up, and I didn't really care for it. It just lost my interest. So I'm happy to see kind of the classic 2D level designs and puzzle-solving mechanics back into the fray, and hopefully they do some new things with it as well. And the fact that it's on, you know, the Wii U is just a treat because you can have these bigger levels and you can have more viewing screen at any time, even when you're making levels. I mean, the 3DS is great for its touchscreen capabilities, but unfortunately, I mean, not to even pick a side, but the gamepad does benefit from having the extra real estate. And the way it sits in your hand, you can kind of kick back easier just and do things on it, as opposed to the 3DS where you have to be a little more precise and be looking a little bit closer to it, you know? So I'm actually really excited for this, and it'll be a day one buy for me.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, are you guys planning on getting it then?
Yeah, I'll definitely get it.
I might take a pass on it. I don't know. If there's a demo for it, I'll try it out. But other than that, it's not at the top of my priority list.
No. Well, you know what might be at the top of your priority list, at least based on previous discussions, is the new old Guacamelee.
Ah, yes. Guacamelee.
So tell me about this game, because I know that it's a game that people have raved about. It's got a lot of, Metroid infusion into it, a lot of Metroid spirit. I actually have it for the Mac, and I forgot. I think I might have got it from a Humble Bundle or something. But I have it.
Yeah.
I haven't played it. I've wanted to play it. I just haven't had time to sit down and kind of boot it or install it and give it a fresh start. But I'm thinking maybe I should just wait for this one to come out.
I was just going to say you should wait for this, I guess, the definitive edition of Guacamelee to come out for the Wii U. Because I guess it has all of the downloadable stuff. It's got the co-op play. You know, all the fun things that the original version didn't have. The one I got for the PC is not the one that's coming out for the Wii U, but it's like a step or two below. What is this? The total name, the full name of the Wii U version that's coming out? Is it Super Championship Edition?
Something super, like that. Super Turbo Championship Edition.
All right. Maybe I only have Super Championship Edition, you know.
I think it's like Gold Edition for PC.
Yeah,
like
I think I have the Gold Edition. That's right. But yeah, you're exactly right. It's got awesome Metroid-infused, Castlevania, Symphony of the Night-infused gameplay, at least in terms of the exploration and, you know, the map layout.
Mm-hmm.
The actual combat, though, is it's all hand-to-hand. It's wrestling. Punch, kick, suplex, pile driver. Oh, yeah. It's actually pretty fun to play. But, like I said on the boards, and I'll mention it again here, with the exception of the bosses. Some of the bosses are, in my opinion, extremely difficult, and it doesn't make sense with the rest of the gameplay. It just doesn't fit.
Well, I didn't have that experience myself. Did you find all the hidden hearts and stuff like that?
Yeah, I found most of them up to a point, yeah.
Because, yeah, I don't remember the bosses being too difficult, really. But
yeah, maybe I'm an idiot.
No, I don't know.
Hey, you want to come back to the caboose with me? We'll just hang out.
But
I
go ahead.
I was going to say, I got to the second to last boss. I think it's the Jaguar or whatever.
Right.
The Jaguar wrestling. And it was very difficult. And I was like, what the hell is this shit? The rest of the game was not that hard up until this point, with the exception of maybe a couple bosses where you'd play through a couple times to learn their tendencies, and then you'd be like, I got this. It's just a little patience. I can do it. But with this guy, man, I was like, nah, I'm done here. So I just stopped.
There was some trick. Not like a cheating trick, but I feel like there's some kind of strategy I used that was very effective.
Well, you're going to have to talk about offline then, because I couldn't figure it out, and it just turned me off from the game from that point on, which is a shame, because the art, the exploration, the moveset, the fighting, the actual dialogue between characters was very well done. The music is awesome. The music is outstanding in the game.
Yeah. I actually got a chance to play the Wii U version at PAX East. And, you know, I played on the gamepad, and it was working, you know, totally on the gamepad, so off-TV play was nice. And they had there was a new move, like a new attack move of some kind. I can't.
All right, name some wrestling moves. I was a former pro wrestler for 8 years. Just name some off.
Frankensteiner. No.
Yes, that's a hurricanrana. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That was in it or not.
Hey, Joe, you want to go get a frappuccino?
Does it have extra fat?
Extra we can make bacon. Sure. Yeah.
But anyway, it seemed to work nice. I mean, the guy actually told me he preferred to play with the pro controller. He didn't like the way the gamepad felt with the game, so you might want to try that. But it felt fine for me. I'm a gamepad fan, so.
Yeah, I love the gamepad. In fact, for the PC version, I bought an Xbox 360 controller, just so I wouldn't have to use the keyboard.
Oh yeah, that's a must.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I mean, if I don't know if there's an equivalent program for. Well, actually, I mean, I guess you probably didn't need to do it this way, but I've said it on the podcast before, but it's called Darwin Remote, and it's a program that actually allows me to sync up my Wii remotes and any sort of related accessories, so even like the Classic Controller Pro, to my computer.
And, yeah, you have mentioned that before.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. So is that kind of, do you have a similar program that allows you to hook up your controller to Bluetooth, or do you have to plug it in through some sort of cable?
I actually got a USB cable enabled 360 controller.
Okay. Yeah, so that's one way to do it. That's
you can also get a wireless receiver. That's what I have for PC, and it's made by Windows. I mean, my Microsoft, so it's compatible with Windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
mine is also.
I can't stand playing games with keyboards anymore.
Yeah, it's tough.
Some games.
Well, keyboard and mouse is good for first person shooters.
Sure.
And games like Civilization or World of Warcraft, things like that.
So pretty much a lot of other games. I'm full of shit. I'm going to go back to the caboose.
But you have a Mac, so.
Yeah, I do. I have a Mac and I play Nintendo, so.
Yeah, you're already behind.
But whatever. at risk of me screwing up the podcast by pushing us in that direction, you know, I'm looking at a fact sheet that Nintendo released for Guacamelee, and I guess there's a bunch of new things that are going to be in this version. So that's kind of, that's cool. You're totally right that I should wait, because they're going to have new game areas, an expanded story, which is probably the DLC that you're mentioning, new abilities, new enemies. There's even a new elite class enemy that wants to choke slam Luchadoras to sleep.
Oh, no.
And multiple save slots. I guess that's new to the series, to the game. Dual currency system that supports permanent item unlocks. I don't know what that means, but I'm sure I will. And track your progress to the world on the gamepad's map. That's cool. And then the last thing...
I was just going to say, that'll be a huge plus, where you play the game on the big screen, but the map is on your small screen. Because on the computer, you had to keep pressing a button to check the map. Yeah. That'll be a big plus.
Be one of those things where you can set up the gamepad on a desk or table right next to you and just kind of use it as a... You can just look over at it. You know, if you don't even have to touch it, you can just play with the classic controller, that kind of thing, maybe?
Maybe.
I would hope so.
Maybe.
I mean, that's kind of how I played Pikmin 3, was I just had the gamepad set up and I used the Wiimote and Nunchuck, and it felt really good to do it.
Although, I did the same as well. It was great.
You know, it's funny. The last thing on this fact sheet that I was reading was about the new boss, and I read it right as you said the bosses sucked. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, the three-headed skeleton that lives in the volcano. I guess he's going to suck. But then Hendrick said maybe.
Well, we'll see.
So,
you know, it's interesting, though. The guy, I talked to one of the developers of the game at PAX East, and he said that he actually prefers the bad ending to the good ending in the game. Makes you think.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll have to play through multiple times to see what he's talking about.
Yeah, I only saw the best ending, so I've been thinking about going back and trying it.
Humble brag. Jeez, hashtag humble brag. you know, okay, so let's... there's a few other small things I really want to touch upon before we head out here. So let's do this. Joe, are you able to tell us the results of the E3 bingo?
Ooh. Sure. Yeah, the incredible results.
Yes.
Now, did you want to do it by card or anything? Or
no, we can just generally discuss it because, you know, we already spent an episode describing what was on the cards. Tell us, and I don't have the cards pulled up, and I probably should, but... So I'm going to pretend like I'm a listener and I don't know what the hell you're looking at. So this way we can make it a visual experience through words. So tell us what, or how many squares were actually correct?
Oh, squares correct
out of the 25. 24.
So,
yeah.
Right, so 25 squares, free space in the middle, 24.
Free Reginator.
Free space. Only 5 actually came true.
So there was a chance for a bingo. Let's say that
there was a chance. We could have done it with 4. Could have. I mean, we gave people a bonus. So
don't knock the free space.
Now I will say I'm proud because when I looked at them, I had a bingo, but it was across 2 lines. So I had 2 in a row. Then I had 1. Then I had the free space, and then I had another one in that same row. But then I had the other one in the other row. So if you just took a really big marker, you could give me a bingo, but technically, no, I didn't have a bingo.
That's true.
And the other ones were a little bit more sporadic.
Yeah.
What did we get right?
Okay, so the things that we got right was we had a showing from Reggie Fizamek. There was a couple different things. Not only, I think they closed out, I think it was like the end of the whole week's worth of streaming. We saw a little thing right at the very end. First, or skit, he like vaporized this woman in the office. And then we saw at the, I believe it was the end of E3, just this really short thing where she just comes back. She just pops in out of nowhere and like turns to the Fizamek and says like, what are we going to do next year? Or something like that. And he just like glares at her and she runs away or something like that. But anyway, not only that, but he mentioned it a couple times when he was making the rounds and stuff. The next one that we definitely got, in fact, we got this a couple times, was completely new IP announced. And it's kind of funny because most of the time you might think that a square like this would be kind of a long shot, but this year not only did we get it, but I mean, so there was Splatoon, and then there was Codename Steam, and was that it? Was there a third one, or were there just the two?
Well, it was Fantasy Life, a new IP.
Well, but is that, well, I guess. I think it's been out for a while. But anyway.
Oh, has it? Okay.
Well, in Japan, I think it's been out for a while.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
But.
Well, maybe Ubisoft's game is a new IP.
Does that count? Yeah, I mean, technically, Ubisoft did announce they have a new game in the works. Anyway. The next was X getting an official title. Or perhaps it was Cross the whole time, getting an official title.
Mm-hmm.
Mario franchise NFC, which we now know as Amiibo. And then a new asymmetric or novel gamepad use. And we definitely saw that between both of Miyamoto's projects, or the Mario Party 10 asymmetric stuff with the Bowser controlling via the gamepad. So, yeah, definitely got those. And everything else, totally wrong. But that's the fun. That's the fun of E3 Bingo. You know, you throw out these outlandish predictions, and a lot of them. You know, a lot of them. I'm kind of surprised. Like, everyone was kind of thinking like Majora's Mask 3D would be a thing. It's funny, we came up with these cards, and then, like, on the card, I think you suggested, like, July release confirmation for Smash Brothers.
Yep.
And then I feel like just a couple days later, a rumor started to circulate, like, oh, they're gonna have Smash Brothers 3DS released in July. Like, it's confirmed but leaked information.
Right.
And then, of course, we get to the show, and it's, you know,
it's
they're
October.
Pushing it back till October. So, anyway... But it was fun. It was pretty cool. The thing is, usually I think E3 Bingo is great because usually there's so little to actually like do with yourself during E3. It's like you absorb the one press conference and then that's it. This year, because of the whole Treehouse stuff that we talked about and how entertaining it was, there wasn't actually that same need to entertain yourself with something beyond the content with Bingo. But anyway, it was cool. Maybe next year we'll refine the idea and do it a little better and get some better predictions.
We can do E3 Treehouse Bingo, and we can try to be like,
God,
Audrey Drake shows up for this, or this guy makes an ass of himself, or 7 games shown on Tuesday. I don't know. We can get really specific.
Bill Trinan laughs at a joke before translating it, or something like that.
I don't know. I actually know some Japanese. Why did I just do a fake Chinese syllable?
I don't know.
Mishmash?
But you know what I figured out through this treehouse actually about Japanese. I noticed that in hearing all these producers talking, and usually when you hear produced, you know, Japanese game developers talking, it's usually sort of looks like this script that they've done 100 times, and then someone translates it. But this time they were speaking, off the cuff. And I noticed that they kept, every couple sentences they would pause and go, "I know," and I sort of figured, I was like, "Is that the Japanese
Yep.
And yeah, so I ran it by a friend of mine, from Japan, and he's like, I guess there's a couple different contextual uses, and I think there's another one like "eto" or something like that. It was very interesting.
The more you know.
Absolutely.
Rainbow.
So okay, cool. Well, thank you for putting that together. It was fun to help you pick out things and just to see what the grid looked like and maybe next year we'll try to get more people involved. We did have cards.
We'll have the guests actually show up for their.
Yeah, I mean, we made cards for guests from episode 64, I believe. But because so few. Well, because nobody got a bingo either. I mean, there's no point in going through each one and saying, well, here's who...
No, they have to come here and accept their humiliation. No, it's not pretty much. It's not like they picked these cards or anything.
Yeah, no. So maybe we'll find a way to refine it next year. That'd be kind of fun to do.
Indeed.
Then the last two things I wanted to do is one more game announcement that made me pretty happy, and I actually only caught wind of it recently. I didn't catch it last week, but there's a game that I wasn't sure was going to get an American release, and I guess it is. And that game is the Art Academy Pokemon Edition is coming to North America. Don't know if you guys care, but I think it's cool.
Tell us about it.
Well, I mean, it's Art Academy, but with Pokemon. I mean, it's got specific lessons, and it's got, you know, free paint, quick sketch, and then lessons. That's kind of like the three, you know, different sections in the game. But the lessons are not how to draw apples. It's how to draw Pikachu, how to, you know, do this artistic styling of Ghastly. And I think, well, I guess I don't know too much about the game in the sense that, you know, will they have a lot of lessons or just a lot of things for you to kind of mimic for people who maybe aren't that great at drawing Pokemon themselves? But the art that they've shown on the box art and everything is pretty diverse. Lucario, Eevee, Mewtwo, Pikachu, a really fugly Pikachu. You know, they have a lot of different art styles and design choices. And as we know from the Art Academy series, there's a lot of different tools at your disposal, different kinds of markers and pencils and all that. So I'm pretty excited for it. You can post things to Miiverse, which is going to be nice. I know Colors 3D and, Colors 3D had its own kind of art gallery that wasn't Miiverse related. But now this is going to have a Miiverse thing. And, you know, the lessons are going to teach you how to draw your favorite Pokemon, which, you know, you can translate that outside of the world maybe a little bit better, even if it's just doodling on your homework. You know, people don't really, you know, draw an apple or an orange or a pear or some sort of fruit in Art Academy, then doodle the art on their things or try to draw them elsewhere. Unless you're really into art, of course. But so I don't know. I just think it was a nice thing. I thought it was a cool idea for expanding the Art Academy world. I think it's great because Pokemon is so diverse. And I was really thinking it was just going to be a Japanese-only thing because I thought Nintendo figured that only the Japanese audience cared. So very glad to see that not be the case. Now, I see a note here in the fact sheet that you can save art to the SD card and then print it out. I wonder what that means for the resolution of these images, because I don't want some business card-sized picture I drew.
I mean, on an 8x11.5 piece of paper.
Yeah, right. That prints weird, so it gets cut off anyway. So hopefully, you know, you're actually drawing higher res art, which would be really awesome. But you know, time will tell. And plus, I always love when these kind of things come out because I love watching everyone else's creations on Miiverse. So having the ability to see that was only going to be just a joy, even if you didn't even get the game. Just go into that community.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but yeah, we are definitely over 3 hours, and just like we were last episode, so I guess I'm not surprised. But I wanted to ask our guest, Joe. You and I gave our answers last episode, so mm-hmm. I wanted Hendrik and Lou to give me your favorite moment from E3 and your least impactful moment. So instead of your least favorite, but just your least impactful, the one that didn't hit you very hard. And I guess, well, you know, Joe, let's give ours to them just for reference. Do you remember yours?
Nope. Do you?
I had a few in my head back a couple of days ago, but my least impactful was the Pokemon announcement because I felt it was such a it just wasn't very strong. It was just kind of like, okay, wow, they're doing this, nothing new. And I mean, I'm a little dismayed with the Pokemon franchise right now anyway, but I just felt that had no impact on me whatsoever. But my favorite moment was definitely, you know, the Zelda reveal. Captain Toad Trackers was also quite a great showing.
And is that my answer?
I think that might have been your answer.
And I didn't like Jeff Keighley, and I liked the Treehouse.
Yeah. So those were our vague answers. So, Hendrik, please lead us off with your least impactful. We go negative first. So
all right. I think for that I'm going to go with a under-the-radar kind of piece of news, which is that the game The Devil Third is now a Nintendo exclusive, And yeah. I don't know if you guys have seen this game, but it looks like basically what you find on the other consoles in spades. Yep. You know, there's a guy, he's a real bro-y guy. He's bald and filled with tattoos, and he, like, you know, he goes around killing people, and apparently he, you know, I don't know, there's some hot woman who he's possibly banged in the past or something like that.
Would you say that he plays by his own rules or other people's rules?
I would not guess that he plays by the other people's rules.
Okay.
And I'm envisioning like a Ninja Gaiden type cutscene when he's banging these girls with his own rules.
Oh, yeah, and I guess, you know, it's from the guy who makes Dead or Alive and Ninja Gaiden, so you kind of know what to expect. And, you know, I'm sure there are people who are excited for it, and then I almost feel bad because the people who are probably most excited for it probably don't have a Wii U. Although some people do like that stuff, and are also Nintendo fans, so good for them. But just for me, not really up my alley.
Yeah, unfortunately, we didn't get to discuss Devil's Third on this podcast because there wasn't interest in discussing it. And in the last E3 podcast we did, either our guests also didn't show much interest. So you know, hopefully, if someone's out there listening to this and thinking we're shitheads for kind of making our jokes, but if you're interested in the game, come on and tell us about it. Tell us why we should, you know, be keeping it on our radar. Because yeah, anything coming into Nintendo, you know, I definitely want to hear about. And I don't feel like this game is going to be hitting my radar too hard, just naturally. So I'd like to get someone's opinion who actually, you know, is invested in it.
True.
But after that PSA, what's your favorite moment?
Well, does it count? Does going to Best Buy count?
It does, sure.
Because that was definitely the highlight. That was the highlight for me. I mean, my wife and I went both days, on Wednesday and Saturday. And, you know, it probably wasn't the best time investment because we spent, like, about 3 hours the first day waiting and got 2 minutes of time with Wii U. And we got the 3DS version, not much more than that. But it was worth it anyway because, I mean, first of all, what really made it great, and this kind of ties in with the tournament, is just how excited everyone seemed. I mean, I knew this was a big series, but just seeing the enthusiasm, first in the tournament and then at the Best Buy. I mean, I live in, you know, this was in West Hartford, Connecticut, not like a thriving metropolis by any means. And yet they said they had 500 people there on the first day. The lines were enormous. Everyone was talking Smash Brothers. This was not just random people who happened to see something going on. They came. They all had their 3DSs, so I got tons of street passes. And you know, the game was awesome. I mean, I love Smash Brothers. You know, it was basically Brawl with prettier graphics, new items, new stages, etc. But it was just hit exactly what I was hoping for, and so it was great.
Now, really quickly, what characters did you get to try?
I got to, I played, on the 3DS version, I played as Mega Man and Villager, because I wanted to try some new folks.
Mm-hmm.
And they both played kind of weird, I would say. Not what I'm used to from Smash Brothers characters, because, like, Mega Man, for example, his A button is a projectile, which I don't think has been done before. But, I mean, they both were cool. I think they're going to take some getting used to. Luckily, I was only playing the Smash run, so it wasn't really a competitive thing. But, you know, I think, like all good characters, I'm going to need to master them to really be able to have a good opinion. But then on the Wii U version, I played as Little Mac, who was really powerful. And, I got tons of KOs with him. And that's even without ever landing one of his super punches. And then I played as Kirby just because Kirby's my main man and I wanted to see how he was, and he was awesome as expected. I was lucky enough to win both of my matches, so that made me feel good.
Humble brag.
That's just a regular brag.
Yeah, that was just a regular brag.
Oh, it was? Okay.
I'm the best and greatest brag.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. You know, it's silly because I'm not very competitive with Smash Brothers, but I won one of my matches. It was the second match that I got to win, and I felt fucking good about it. You know, I felt like, because I was in Atlanta and I was, you know, far away from home, I was like, yeah, that's right, Detroit represent. You know,
and then the 8 Mile soundtrack.
I'm a little jealous. I guess people at E3 got, like, if you won, you won a T-shirt, which would have been awesome.
Yeah. Ooh. Oh man. Shit. I should probably tell my little story because I didn't do it on the last podcast. But just to add to that, I did. Just so you know, I did talk about this in the last podcast, but I got to play as the villager in both versions. I played it in the 3DS, but then I didn't want to play with the Wii U one without trying villager on there because I had wanted him so long, for so many years, and I just had, he had to be the very first character I played as. So I played as him again, and you're right, he is very weird. He's, I put him akin to Olimar in Brawl, right, where he's just designed different. He's probably really powerful if you can use him right, but he's not going to be for everybody. And then I wanted to do Mega Man, but everyone else was, so I was like, you know what, I'll do Rosalina and Luma. And she actually was pretty powerful, and she was pretty fun to play with, too. Nice. Has some unique moves that I think, again, in time, I could really begin to master, and it's nice to see a strong female character, you know, added to the roster.
You know, it's funny, you know, every year people say they should put these demos out on the eShop, so that people can just play them if they can't go to E3. But if this demo was out on the eShop, like, I wouldn't play anything else. Like, just this demo I could play for years and years to come.
It's true. They had, like, a good 15 characters, 7 levels maybe, and they were good levels too.
Yeah, so
I didn't get a chance to play some of the ones that I wanted to, but we played the Fire Emblem level, and I can't remember what the first level was. But I really wanted to play the Super Mario level, which looked really cool, but
yeah, I got to play the Mega Man level, which was crazy because the Yellow Devil, you don't realize just how, like, I thought he would, you know, be like a minor annoyance in the background, but he was just basically like causing everyone to have huge damage the entire match, and like I didn't know his pattern yet, and so like he was fucking up everybody basically. And then we played the Punch-Out level, which was, you know, kind of basic, but the one thing that's cool is that you can go up into the, you know, like the lights area, like above the stage, they have the thing that you pull. Yeah, mm-hmm. The light rigging, you can go up in there and fight, which was kind of cool.
Sweet. That said, moving on, Lou.
Yes, sir.
Still with us.
I'm still here.
Okay, good. Because I want to hear your least impactful moment. Go.
Well, if it wasn't for Hendrik there mentioning it, I guess Devil's Third. Man, I totally forgot about that until he mentioned that in his portion. I was like, oh, yeah, that came out. Yeah, yeah, they mentioned that. Yeah, yeah.
I guess that's the true definition of least impactful, then, if you didn't even remember. Yeah.
If you totally forget about it, it's not even impactful. Also, I might even throw in the Pokemon. You know, it's like, it's too much too soon and all the time.
It does feel like that to me too, yeah. And here's the thing, I didn't say this last episode, but there's a little in the trailer, there's still that note of 2D game, 3D in some areas. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Why is this not a fully 3D game by now?
Why isn't it on the Wii? How hard is it to just make a fully HD Pokemon game, you know, with little cutscenes that look like the cartoon that we used to watch?
You know, with Wi-Fi multiplayer, you know, gaming on the Wii U kind of taking a stride, we don't really need to have the excuse of, well, Pokemon's portable, you know, that's why it stays there. You can do a lot of trading and battling through your Wii U's now, and you can get people together, and it can be a fun experience. I do think that is a cop-out at this point.
Yeah.
When they had the live action teaser too, I actually thought that there was going to be a Wii U Pokemon for a second.
Hmm. So just it's a letdown. I hate to say that, but
blah.
But okay, now you have to take us out with a favorite moment that's awesome. with extra bacon.
Oh, man. A total fat frappuccino with extra bacon. Get on it, Starbucks. My favorite moment, I guess, not even like a game reveal, but like the Smash Brothers tournament. That was fun to watch. I actually joined in the middle of the tournament, so I missed the early rounds, but I saw like the last couple round groupings and then some of these celebrity matches, and it was really fun to watch them
quote fight unquote it out. Celebrity matches.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the people I didn't like, who are these people?
Who are these people?
Who are these people?
Nice Seinfeld.
Yeah. What is the deal? It was, what's the deal with all these characters?
Smash Brothers. They're not
brothers. I'm not taking them to the airport.
We're awesome.
Seinfeld cast. Well, I'll play a character from Seinfeld.
Oh, that'd be awesome. And see, in Smash Brothers with the me, you could make George
Costanza. Oh, my God. George versus Elaine versus Kramer versus Jerry.
Oh, my God. Make it happen.
Finally.
With like a Newman me who like is the final, you know, guy to fight. Oh,
it's an assist trophy.
So, yeah, Newman assist trophy. Jeez.
Yeah, that it was really fun to watch.
Super Seinfeld. Sorry,
Lou. What did you think about how extra long that one guy took to get up to the stage at the end there? Do you not recall this?
Because he kept slapping hands.
Yeah, he was like slapping hands and taking pictures, and
he was being the good guy, man. The other guy was the heel. He didn't slap as many people's hands.
Ooh,
I think he even slipped someone off.
No, I see it the other way. I see it the other way around.
Was it the scarf guy who was the one who was slow?
No. Scarf guy walked right up.
Scarf guy was fast.
He was definitely the heel, in my opinion.
What? Why was he the heel?
Was he the caboose?
His scarf. He didn't slap was anybody's hands.
I think people really just don't respond well to this scarf.
Kirby is the, and anyway, Kirby is the natural hero, of course.
Well, obviously Kirby is very beloved, yes.
Kirby's the original me.
But even that guy, that the Kirby guy, the thing was over, and remember he was like, I have one more request or something, and like, they basically, like, Reggie turned the show over to him, and he was like, he was about to ask. He was like, Reggie, play me one time for glory. And Reggie's like, no, that's not what this is about.
Yeah. Reggie probably would have got crushed, too. And that would
yeah,
have been
he would have. He would have.
Yeah, I hear that if you beat Reggie in Smash Bros., you become the president of Nintendo America.
Oh, which is how it works. That's how he got the job.
Yeah.
But back to the tournament, it's like what the whole Nintendo presentation was about. It was about the gameplay and the games itself. And that's why I really like that. It was a good showcase for all of that, rather than just glitzy trailers with beheaded aliens being shot in the face with boomerangs.
So much beheading and throat stabbing.
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, cool. I mean, hopefully Nintendo does something like that next year. I don't know. They could do, for the hell of it, a Wii U version tournament now that that'll be out. But or maybe they'll have a new multiplayer game, a Splatoon tournament.
Ooh, that could be
good. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
But, all right. So I guess that wraps up an extra long episode of this here podcast. I guess I just want to go into the usual spiel and tell everybody to find this thread on negativeworld.org and come check it out and comment and criticize and share your feelings, because that's what we're all about at Negative World. Share your feelings. If you're not a subscriber and you don't want to share your feelings, or you don't want to subscribe to Negative World, you can at least find us on the Facebook page and search for negativeworld.org, or you can follow us on Twitter at @negative_world. As usual, I got to throw a big thanks out to Hendrik and Lou, our guests. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to hang with Joe and I and dealing with all the technical difficulties we've either had or I've edited out.
Thanks for having me.
It really depends, yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I mean, hell, Lou, you've been fighting nature to get through this podcast, so I appreciate that.
I fought it and won.
You fought the nature and you won.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, this is Dr. Finkelstein saying, drink your bacon. Night, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
There was a lot of discussion about where I would get my Nintendo tattoo in the in line for the Smash Bros. Event. It was kind of funny.
Oh, interesting.
But one guy's like, I'm going to get two. I'm going to get the Triforce, and then I'm going to get... And then I didn't hear what he said, but...
I've thought about getting It's Dangerous to Go Alone somewhere.
Wow.
On one. Your penis. It's dangerous to go alone. Take this.
We might have to have the X-rated director's cut of this episode.
Directly to you. I bet you that's on Iwata's penis.
Or what? Miyamoto's. You are in a mood tonight. What is?
I'm feeling sassy, I guess.
You are.